And now back to a robot who can feel love. Mark Maron.
Back to Jim.
From last night.
Oh, all right. I mean, we haven't been here before today.
Well,
it's not back to. We're just getting here.
We're always on.
Yeah, always on, man. All day long. I'm just like blah 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 blah. Always on, man. Sitting in the back, watching my life trickle away. I'm on. Sitting there at home, making the oatmeal. Every morning, oatmeal. That's a sign of age, my friend.
Man,
That's age.
Envy your life. I envy you so much.
You do not.
With the oatmeal?
So, the Clippers, I guess, lost. I gleaned that. Is that true? They did lose? Yeah, okay. I apologize. I'm sorry if that upset people. How's that reaching out to the people who might be a little upset in their cars tonight?
10-point loss, Mark.
How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, sports fans, of course, lurking conservatives? This is the Mark Maron Show. You are listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. You can join the blog party at markmaron.com or call us at 877-520-1150. I will give you a reason to call in just a few minutes. This is the pre-show show that we do after short Clippers games. Tonight, later in the show, we're going to have Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stone magazine. He's written an article on Jack Abramoff. He's a center, an old center for the Clippers. He was a quarterback, I think, or a linebacker for the Beverly Hills High football team, and also a famous lobbyist who is going down, who will be strung up for the insane criminality of his behavior over the last 25 years in the Republican greed machine. We've got Jeff Greenberg, who's going to comment on a study that we talked about yesterday, which a psychological study of personality over many years done on nursery school kids up through their 40s, which proves that whiny, needy, clingy, annoying children generally turn out to be conservative. Not saying Republican necessarily, but conservative. Whereas self-reliant, relaxed, confident kids, liberal. Because they get to a certain point in their life, they realize, well, there's a lot of opportunities in the world, there's a lot of options, a lot of things to think about, a lot of things to do. Why judge and narrow your possibilities? We're going to talk to Jeff Greenberg. He's a journalist. He's not a journalist. He's from the University of Arizona to talk about this liberal kids, conservative kids study. Heather Rogers, which I'm really looking forward to, folks. Hold on. I'm going to grab the book right now.
Grabbing book.
Book grabbed. This book, Gone Tomorrow, The Hidden Life of Garbage. Now, that may sound trite, may sound trivial. It may sound stupid to some of you people that might be listening still from the Clippers games. Like, what is this, garbage? Who the hell wants to read a book about garbage? This book will change your life in terms of just knowing what happens to that piece of food, that piece of plastic, that old cell phone that you throw away, and how we're going to pay for it in the next 20 or 30 years. It's a book about landfills, about water pollution, about planned obsolescence, and now the great big capitalist machine has designed a world that will be overrun by filth and garbage. That sounds negative, but I'm telling you, it's fascinating. Does that sound negative to you, Jim?
No, I look forward to it.
And are we going to talk about meat with her? Are we? Can we get that out
so.
Now?
Meat's incredibly wasteful in every way.
But you know what's interesting? Environmentally speaking, this is one of the things that we do not talk about. We talk about your issue, which is meat and the effects of raising cattle and agribusiness on the environment. We talk about industrial waste. We talk about a waste of energy. But rarely do people just talk about the basic garbage itself.
You know who?
Landfills.
Who really does, but nobody pays attention to them?
Who's that? Ralph Nader.
Archaeologists, because they sift through garbage all the time. Garbage is their life.
But that's very old garbage, and that garbage takes on a whole new importance. And I'm thinking that, you know, Cro-Magnon Man or maybe the Tomb of Ramses does not have some toxic bit of chemical waste there in the golden shrine casket that is polluting the Nile River as we speak. It's a different type of garbage. Had style. It was a little more organic, had a little more authenticity.
Well, you had asbestos mines and old tin mines, and then the curse of King Tut's tomb.
Wait, there was asbestos mines in ancient Egypt? Come on.
Ancient Greece.
Yes, okay, Greece.
They sent the slaves and the captured soldiers into the asbestos mines.
Thank God some of those slaves were actually able to win some lawsuits against the asbestos manufacturers. They weren't there. But I thought Greek was the original democracy, and wasn't there democracy and justice in ancient Greece? And a lot of those ancient slaves who worked in the ancient asbestos mines filed lawsuits against the horrendous asbestos mining serfdoms, leaders?
It was justice only for Whitey.
I'm all jacked up, aren't I? Therese Barr, the star of the new film Larry the Cable Guy, she's going to be in here to talk about that movie and her experience. I know, again, some of you might be judging. You might be out there going, Larry the Cable Guy? What is this, Redneck Hour? Larry the Cable Guy, he's a comic. I knew him when he was Dan Whitney. I have not seen the movie. I've not even seen him perform maybe once. But Therese is a very talented actress and incredibly funny, and she's going to be here with us. And also, we're going to have a new favorite here at the Marc Maron Show, Svetlana, the Russian prostitute film critic, cultural critic, I want to call her. And I feel bad that I just outed her as a prostitute because I don't think we really established that. We did establish that? All right. It's weird because people come here from Russia. A lot of people come, and they'll make a go just as immigrants. And I'm not necessarily judging her, but she's an attractive woman, and this is what she does for her life. But she is trying to make the transition into show business reporting and other things. But she went to the premiere of Larry the Cable Guy. Also, very excited, the man behind the website Crooks and Liars, John Amato, will be here with us. NBC News correspondent, to address some of the issues. You know what amazes me, Jim, is that Laura Ingraham. Now, you would think that most people who get cancer learn something about that. It gives them some humility. It gives them some respect for what is right in the world. Or maybe they just get cranky. But Laura Ingraham, who sadly, I believe, has cancer. And she is on the TV just, you know, full of the, you know, fury and hate of just a Republican demon, you know, trying to, in their desperation, in the Republicans' throes of desperation, trying to accuse the media of bias around the Iraqi war still. You know, and I'm going to get into this a little later in a little more in depth when we start the show proper. But war is negative. War is bad. There is nothing good about war, period. In order to report on it at all without being partisan, you must be objective to the fact that war is a heinous activity on any level, especially one that shouldn't have been waged in the first place. But any war is heinous. And to say that, like, hey, but there's positive things, that would be partisan the other way. I'm telling you, for most practical purposes, if they were to really report the truth about the war, it would be much worse than what's coming out right now. So we're going to talk to NBC News correspondent Michael Betcher, that's how you pronounce it, from NBC, as I said. He's going to be in Iraq. I'm very excited. We have not had an Iraqi correspondent, a war correspondent from Iraq since we did the old show, and I'm looking forward to talking to Michael. We're going to have your Wheel of Anger later, Jim, which I'm very excited about.
Damn.
I'm sorry to wake you up.
No. So look, man, I'm just looking at all the material. There's a lot of stuff to digest here.
Dude, there's a lot of material. I can't even see my clock, so I have no bearing on the time. We should do the liberal confessional in just a second, but can I read this letter first? I'd like to read this letter. I think I got enough time. This is a letter, and it's not innocuous, and it's not a political issue, but it's an important issue because it comes from one of our regular listeners who is a fan of the show and had a problem with me. Now, I've gotten some hate mail, but this isn't hate mail. This is somebody trying to explain something to me because I'm being, she's calling me an elitist, a snob, contempt prior to investigation, which, you know, knowing that I use that phrase, some of you know the secret club that I might belong to. But she was referring initially to my reaction to the Oscars and Jon Stewart's performance at the Oscars and my feeling that he condescended 3-6 Mafia and might have even behaved a little racistly. Is that the word? Racially? Racist?
Racist.
I don't want to get into that again. Okay, but this got, starting from that point, I'm quoting this email, and this is from a fan, Kathleen. She says, it got me thinking about the consistency of your opinions, being me. You repeatedly diss everyone and everything related to American Idol, calling the contestants talentless losers and generally dismissing the entire show and everyone that watches it without, I might add, ever seeing the show yourself. I know American Idol sounds cheesy and commercial and uncool. I was of that opinion too and didn't start watching it until the second half of the third season. It's season 5 now, only because a couple of Hawaii kids made the final 12. If there's anything Hawaii people support, it's people from their state trying to make good in the bigger world. She's from Hawaii. One thing I learned from my viewing is that one shouldn't prejudge or stereotype something just because it's ridiculously popular, successful, and commercial. Now, I might want to interject here. I don't necessarily judge all things that are popular, commercial, and ridiculously successful as bad, just the ones that lower the bar. Okay. But I'm going to hear her argument because I'm a sentimentalist myself. And despite what anyone may think they hear out of me, I am prone to tearful fits. When I heard Keith Olbermann on his show reacting to Laura Ingraham's insanely rabid hate demon Republican speech about the press, when I watched Keith Olbermann on his show respond to that by listing the names of reporters that have died in the line of reporting that war, I choked up. I squirted out a few. It touched me that deeply. We're going to play that a little later. But now we're talking about American Idol. And I'm not beyond squirting out a couple tears for something as cheesy as this. Maybe that's one of the reasons I choose not to watch it. But going on. American Idol is about hopes and dreams and empowerment. The contestants are reaching for their dreams, and the audience is given the chance to enable that. Where else can an unrich, unknown, unconnected person win a huge lottery by winning over millions of people with his or her talent? And contrary to your prefabricated opinion, many of them do have talent. Fine, got to interject. Yes, that might be the case. But a lot of people are entertained just that they're trying to have talent. Nah, this is my criticism. Now, back to the email. Where else can people directly participate in awarding someone his or her dreams? As we both know, it's certainly not in the presidential elections. Yeah, a little political. Not going to condescend this letter because I like Kathleen. Most people have very ordinary lives, ordinary IQs, ordinary looks, ordinary friends, ordinary families, ordinary abilities, and really no hope for extraordinary dreams coming true. That is one of the saddest paragraphs I've ever read in my life. Am I wrong?
I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's true. What, define ordinary.
That's exactly it. Define normal. A lot of people are festering with all kinds of weirdness and things that they do that no one knows about that could be considered, you know, talent and strange dreams. But I think there is a Walter Mitty element to a lot of ordinary people that she's not giving credence to. But moving on, they work all day and come home tired and have a beer and sit on the couch and watch TV. With American Idol, they slip the bounds of their ordinary existence and in a small way participate in something that helps fulfill someone else's dream. And they also get some entertainment in the process. They get to know the contestants and pick their favorites and root for them and follow them and talk about them with their families and coworkers and friends. And it all becomes one big national water cooler where everyone's opinion, whether 9 or 99, black or white, male or female, straight or gay, is just as valid as anyone else's. Okay, got to interject. Yeah, but it's about American Idol. Isn't that sad? Don't you think that we should be unifying around something more collectively, more important? Don't you think that one of the reasons American Idol is out there and is so successful is that it so successfully distracts people from what is important? It so engages people in an emotional process that is manipulative, and it enables people to have feelings about something inane as opposed to have feelings about something that is important and should be a collective concern? All right, back to the email. It's cheesy, but it's also quite touching. Okay, I understand that, and I understand your defense of it, but I still think that, by and large, it is a distraction, it is an emotional manipulation, and it does lower the bar, but I understand your enjoyment of it, and I will not condescend to it anymore, and I will watch it and take it in. And then back to the email, she says, of course, I too am outraged at what's happening in the world right now, otherwise why would I listen to you? But everyone needs an escape from this misery, and American Idol two nights a week provides a harmless one, and even a happy one. I just don't see what's so wrong with that. I don't know if it's harmless. Now, your significant other.
Yes.
She enjoys the American Idol.
Oh, we both love watching it. But you know what? It's the like the first five shows that we love watching, where everybody is trying out, and everybody really sucks, and it's hilarious. It's not the later shows where you have the people who are actually good at singing that kind of horrible style, that's interesting anymore.
So you like the humanity of the struggle of people that aren't talented and thus actually extraordinary in their courage to go out there and express themselves the best they can, even though it doesn't fit the mold.
No, I don't like it. That's not what it's just like the Gong Show. Only without it's unintentionally humorous.
Right. But, okay, so you're looking at it in a campy way. But yeah. Not unlike the Gong Show, I'm sure with American Idol, there is that element where people know that they suck. But sometimes you can see a real humanity in people that are just trying. And yeah. I understand that. But I'd rather see that humanity in people that are trying to facilitate some change or people that are trying to express themselves. Let's do this now. You know, in coming back to the point, it really isn't easy being a liberal because I don't want to come off as being intolerant, and I'm happy that she enjoys it, and I'm not going to condescend to it, but I still reserve the right to be critical of the collective effect of that type of pablum.
Well, here's the thing for me is that I don't like it in general because it is a certain style of music and singing that is just horrific. You know, it's bad. It's the kind of garbage you hear. And elevators.
I understand. You like it for the wrong reasons.
But, you know, but there's the competition that's fun up to a certain point.
Right.
And interesting.
Right.
You know?
But as I was saying...
You know, let me interject for a second here,
yes,
guys.
Yes, Brendan McDonald.
I just wanted to point out that on the basis of that email, we just saw a news story today that said that four of the finalists, I guess the 10 finalists that are there right now...
Were caught doing steroids?
No, they have lots of professional experience. They've been opening for people like
there
Shania
you go.
Twain.
There you go. See, it's not even genuine. It's a racket.
And
that's what you're saying,
it's not
right?
against the rules of the competition for people to have prior experience, but they don't let you know that when they're actually on the show. These things come out in news reports
right.
and people check out that. Well, I think one girl was the lead in The Lion King on over at the Pantages.
Two contestants were arrested, and it's always so fun to figure out which one is going to take Ludes and go to bed with Paula Abdul.
But what she's saying, what you're saying is true, and that's the other criticism, is that this is a big business. This is where corporations, music corporations, entertainment corporations, BMG, Sony, EMI, whatever's left, I don't even know who they are, the big music conglomerates can get people, pay them nothing, make a fortune off their first record, and then watch them sink like a stone. It's prostitution on some level. And this gimmick of the emotional connection everyone has and the manipulation it's doing to the public is really thinly veiled business. It's how they undercut. It's like basic cable. It's like when you do comedy and they're like, hey, you know, we're not going to pay you, but there's food and you'll get good exposure. But meanwhile, some other idiot's making millions of dollars off of exploiting your dreams. It's not always easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 877-520-1150. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Cardinal Milfington, for I have sinned.
Lift up your eyes, idolator, from the dank pits of Gehalahab, and bring forth to me your shameful confession.
Your Grace, last week I was watching 60 Minutes and...
Sinner! Satan is within you. May the ghost of Sheena Alexander haunt your bedchambers.
I'm not finished yet.
Oh, okay, fine. Don't fake me out like that. Proceed.
Okay, so my wife and I are watching 60 Minutes. It was a piece on sperm donors, and there was this lesbian couple on who had a baby, and they were talking about how knowing who the father was would be a good thing. And then the more dominant-seeming of the woman said she had no father growing up, so I said, well, now you are the father.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's funny, right?
Yeah, I like it.
I thought so, but my wife called me on the comment saying that it was implying that because she had no father, that I was implying because she had no father, it made her gay, which, of course, gives credence to the idea that being gay is a pathological thing as opposed to a biological or preferential thing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I felt guilty because I'm a tolerant person. I really am. I was just making light of something that I guess made me a little uncomfortable. Not to mention, I got mad at her for stepping on my joke.
Oh, okay. First, Mark, it's okay to get mad at your wife for stepping on your joke. Mishina has to learn she's nothing more than a good-natured bouncing board for your attempts at humor.
Yeah, that'll happen when hell freezes over.
Stifle yourself, blasphemer. That's my livelihood you're mocking. That said... Your joke sucks.
Hey, wait a minute. You just said it was funny. I don't understand.
Mark, what? You clearly have a sensitivity problem and a problem with facts. Having a father does not make you straight, just as the absence of a father does not make you gay.
I know that, Father.
In fact, nothing can really explain this bra I'm wearing other than my own natural preference to irritate people. Now, here's your penance.
All right, hit me, Cardinal Milfington.
Mark? Ironically, your penance will be the same as last week's, to spend a whole weekend locked in a hotel room with Rosie O'Donnell and one Slim Jim. Then you'll really have to learn who's the daddy.
I still don't even know what the hell that means.
God's a mystery, monkey boy. Now go forth and sin no more and take your calls.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Mort. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 877-520-1150. 50 past.
Now he's got more potential allergens than McDonald's French fries, Mark Maron.
That's right. What did you just say?
You have more allergens than McDonald's French fries. Remember that story?
I was so furious this morning. We're taking confessions. 877-520-1150. I was furious this morning.
About what?
I was screaming, yelling in the middle of one of my diatribes about certain things that are going on that I can't talk about. I was filling up my hummingbird feeder. I was like that yin and yang, man. Wait, which is the bad one? Which is the dark one, the yin or the yang? Which is it, yang? I'm being is yang the dark one? Because I am being, I am in a constant fight. There is no balance. I am constantly fighting the yang. Let's hear.
You should never fight your yang.
I know. Tell me about it. Yeah, Kristen in Chicago, what is your confession? How have you sinned?
I have been incredibly bad, and I think my mother hates me now.
Wow, this is getting good already.
I know. well, first of all, for every person who's been born on my mother's side for the past 4 years, someone has, on the same year, died on my dad's side.
Wow, this is getting much larger than I ever assumed it could.
I know. And it was 3 for 3, and so I told my my mom's side to not have sex anymore so that I could catch up on my dad's side. And on Christmas Day, we found out that my cousin was pregnant again, which was great, and that also my dad was going to have an angiogram, which led to a bypass, or what he called a Cheney.
Wow. Yeah. So your cousin on your mother's side is pregnant?
Yes.
And your sin is what?
And my sin is that my mom just called me and told me that my cousin is having problems with her baby.
Oh, no.
And I told my mom that, I was like, I'm happy because that means that my dad's not going to die.
Oh, my God. That's a difficult one.
And so now I don't know what to do.
Well, my God, I think you might have to actually pray.
I know.
And I'm not a believer. No, I think that what you have to do, honestly, is you know, go shopping for a baby present, for a baby shower present, and make sure you're very nice to the pregnant person, okay? Because I think there's a way that you can kick this curse, all right? And then
okay.
I think you should go to your father. Is he in the hospital or?
No, he got out early January.
Okay, so he's going to be okay, you know, and I think that, you know, all you have to do to really erase this is buy, why don't you do this, you know, just so you get a little edge, you know, buy the baby's mother for the shower something that you know she won't like. Yeah, just so at least you feel like you stuck her a little bit, but you at least didn't wish anybody would die. And then, you know, eventually, if everything works out, you'll be able to talk to your father like a child because he'll live a long time.
Okay, so I should stop buying the Marc Maron Show flowers in order to bribe them for an internship and instead buy my cousin something that she would not like.
Oh, is this you? Where are you? Yeah. In Chicago? Look, if you want to move to L.A., all right, we got to.
No, I will.
Okay, I'll write you later. Thanks, Kristen.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you.
Yep. Wow, that was, she's just the kind of person I want to have around the office, you know, throwing hexes.
That was a barrel laugh.
Wow, man. No, I understand. You know, that's what confessions are about. And I think that she can erase that that badness if she just buys a nice gift. And man, that was heavy, though. I want to hire her. We're out. 58 Pets.
Live from Burbank, California, the place where people fail upwards, it's the Marc Maron Show.
Yeah, it's not the Majority Report. I'm not Sam Cedar. I'm certainly not Janine, though I love both of them, but I'm not. I'm going to have to fix those bumpers, man. And we're not joining the show either from before. We're here.
That's
How
right.
are you, geniuses? Philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, children who will become liberals. Good morning to you. Or good afternoon, or good evening. It's evening. Come on, man. Pull it together. Too many starbursts. Ate a lot of starbursts. Very satisfying. But not a good thing to eat on the break, because you don't know if it's going to time out properly. You know when you got a starburst in your mouth, that you're not sure it's going to time out properly?
Man, I don't like that company. It's Starbursts. They're open up everywhere, just taking over neighborhoods and stuff.
Oh, Jim, that's Starbucks.
Okay.
Starbucks. Wow.
That was a great joke, though. That was a great bit we had just for a second there.
What is this, the morning show? Give us a, can we get a silly noise? That's Starbucks. Yeah, thanks. Hey, look, man, if you want to do this, we are listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. We are blogging the night away at markmaron.com, MarcMaron.com. If I don't become famous or more famous or have any success in the broader culture in terms of real fame, the one thing I could only hope is that people will know that my name is spelled M-A-R-C-M-A-R-O-N. The plague of going through life, M-A-R-C, and with that last name, Maron, moron, marinated, you can do anything with it. Moran, spell it with two R's, with an I. You can do anything with it, but spell it right. It's unbelievable.
Moron. How... moron.
You get funny noise? There you go. How do you like that? No, but even people will spell it right at the top of the paper in the middle wrong. It's not a major issue, and there are major issues to talk about. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. A document obtained by the Smoking Gun website details Vice President Dick Cheney's demands for his hotel rooms. All the television channels need to be preset to Fox News because the shock of having to manually surf through another network's real news story would put too much strain on his heart. A former aide to Fidel Castro, who now lives in Miami, spilled the dirt on the communist leader to a local newspaper. Delfin Fernandez says the Cuban leader has his underwear burned to foil any assassination attempts with chemicals during laundering, and of course to thwart any attempts at malicious Melvining. Don't hold it in.
What are you looking at me for?
You didn't sit there and hold it in.
I wrote that joke. I can't laugh at it.
Oh, investment banks, at least you could do is laugh at it. Investment banks and brokerage firms are cracking down on the practice of business executives meeting at strip clubs. The New York Stock Exchange recently proposed rules prohibiting bankers from holding meetings while rubbing up against strippers, but stopped short of prohibiting them from being able to the public up the ass. Did we drop that? We dropped it. Because I didn't say it. That's today's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. Boy, that sort of came apart at the end. Look, yesterday we were talking about something that was very interesting and provoked a lot of interesting phone calls, and I'd like to do that again. A study released by the Journal of Research into Personality finds that whiny kids, more so than not, turned into rigid adults who were drawn to traditional gender roles, i.e. conservative. They were afraid of ambiguity. And they sought reassurance in the reassurance that authority provided. And kids who were more confident turned out to be more self-reliant, non-conforming grown-ups, i.e. liberals. And this study was done over 40 years, over 100 nursery school kids by a couple up there in Berkeley. And I like the research. I mean, I think it sounds good to me. It works. I know, obviously, it can't be completely right. I'm sure there are rigid liberals, and there are... No, I don't think there are any truly open-minded conservatives. There was another study that that confirmed the findings. A researcher that reviewed 44 years' worth of studies in psychology of conservatism found that people who are dogmatic, fearful, intolerant of ambiguity, and intolerant of uncertainty, people who crave order and structure, are certainly more likely to gravitate towards conservatism. Now, obviously, there are variations in the results. Obviously, some self-reliant kids became conservatives. I mean, I know plenty of insecure liberals, but they'll admit it at least. I don't know many conservatives who will admit they're insecure. That's not part of their belief system. I know plenty of frightened liberals, and they'll admit that as well. I don't know any conservatives who are frightened that will readily admit it. They will fight themselves out of a desire for order. And obviously, not everyone believes the results of the study. Our guest calls it bias, shoddy work, and poor science. Jeff Greenberg is a professor of social psychology at the University of Arizona. Thanks for being with us, Jeff.
Sure.
I appreciate you coming down. So as a social psychologist, what is the primary issue you have with these studies?
Okay. Well, I want to talk specifically about the study.
The block study?
Nursery,
in Berkeley?
Right. Because I was asked to read it and respond to it by the reporter who reported the study.
Yeah.
And I read it very carefully twice, and it is biased, and I regret the terminology I used there. It was a little too strong. It is science. It did take a lot of work. They evaluated the personalities of nursing school children.
100 nursery school kids in Berkeley.
Right, when they were 3 and 4 years old, they tracked them down 20 years later and looked at their political orientation.
Okay.
And they found certain correlations between personality at age 3 and 4 and whether they were liberal or conservative 20 years later.
Okay.
A lot of work, and you know, Block and Block, who did the study.
They're respectable people.
They are very respectable personality researchers, no question about that.
Okay.
There's a couple of problems with it.
Okay.
You know, one is that their characterization of what they found is not doesn't fit the data. So let me give you an example.
Okay.
For girls, what they found is that liberal girls tended to behave in a dominating manner, express negative feelings openly, tease other children, attempt to transfer blame to others, were aggressive physically or verbally, tended to be judgmental of others, tried to be the center of attention, and tend to dramatize and exaggerate mishaps.
That is exactly the type of woman I'm attracted to.
Right. It has a certain appeal. But that's in their own data. That's in their own table.
Okay. So and, that you're saying that contradicts what? That
contradicts the tenor of their own conclusions and those in the article, that it's a much more complicated set of findings that they found. Kids who were aggressive, bossy, dominating, negative to other children, ended up becoming liberal.
Well, I can understand.
Read an article and emphasize that.
I can understand that, and I understand that those personality traits are certainly within liberal personalities that I know. I have them myself, but I think that what is really interesting is that the assumption that we have about conservatives today, as adults and as a movement, and the findings that I found interesting was that, you know, that whiny, needy people that were very frightened, you know, were drawn towards authoritarian models. Now, does that science hold up?
Well, that in some cases it does, and I have research of my own that's consistent with that. However, the problem with their findings is that, first of all, there's nothing about whininess in their findings, and that was, in my view, a misrepresentation by the newspaper reporter. But what they did find basically is that kids who grew up and ended up being conservative in this sample were kids who seemed deviant from their peers, who seemed anxious in the nursery school, who seemed a little suspicious or distrustful in the nursery school, just seemed kind of timid and lost in that environment, okay?
Timid and lost.
Right. Now, problem with that is that the research was done in Berkeley, and it was a nursing school in Berkeley between 1969 and 1971, and the nursing school teachers who evaluated the kids were Berkeley graduate students.
Okay, well, I understand how you could see bias there.
No, I'm a liberal. Don't get me wrong. I believe liberals are fine. I'm a liberal. But it's a very liberal environment. And so I think that there's two alternative explanations for these findings
that
make more sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay, the first one is that the kids of conservative parents who end up in a nursery school in Berkeley, California at that time period are going to feel uncomfortable and are going to feel like they don't fit in because they're a small minority.
So this is your analysis of their study?
Right.
Okay.
So, all right, that's one. The second explanation, and they didn't look at the political orientation of the parents of these kids.
Right.
But we don't know if that's true or not, but it's plausible.
I'm just hoping that the world can get back to that.
Right. The second explanation is that kids who are not adjusting well in whatever cultural milieu they're being brought up in are going to tend to reject the dominant values.
And aren't they also going to be drawn towards authoritative figures?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's an empirical question.
For
I'm
safety?
Just saying that these data don't clearly support it because these two alternatives are plausible. Now, if they did the same study in Ames, Iowa, okay?
Yeah.
And they found, again, that the confident kids who are fitting in well, who are doing well, who are feeling self-reliant and feeling comfortable in an Ames, Iowa nursery school, grow up liberal, and the kids who are uncomfortable and seem to be deviant and not fitting in an Ames, Iowa nursery school, end up being conservative, that would be support for their interpretation.
Well,
I don't think that would happen. I think the opposite would be likely.
Well, for years, being liberal in Ames, Iowa was illegal, and we both know that.
Right.
Now, let me ask you quickly before we finish up with you. Do you think that there are any indicators, from your opinion, from the studies you've done, that show what political ideology kids will gravitate towards?
Well, what we've shown in our work is that things like support for George Bush before the 2004 election was strengthened when you reminded people of their own mortality or reminded them of the attacks of 9/11.
So fear.
What I do think is that fear, and specifically fear of death, does drive people to prefer ideologues, to prefer people who have simplistic views of things and say, hey, come with me and we're going to heroically triumph over evil.
They feel part of something that they can believe in that will transcend their life.
Right. And the only, you know, the only objection I have to the other work that you talked about by Jost and colleagues,
the conservatives,
right, is that if you go to Eastern European countries or if you did research in China or the former Soviet Union, you would find that the people who are afraid and scared and are looking for something rigid are the ones who will be the most left-wing.
Interesting. In a complete totalitarian situation. Well, Jeff Greenberg, thanks for shedding some light from your point of view on this. I appreciate you being with us.
Sure.
Okay, bye-bye. Now, 877-520-1150, I would like to know when you found out you were a liberal or a progressive, at what point in your life, what moment in your life, what event in your life catalyzed that for you. We did some calls with that yesterday, and it was very touching, and it was exciting to talk to you. 877-520-1150, what kind of kid were you, and how'd you turn out liberal? So why don't you give us a call and tell us.
And now more music and passion with Mark Maron.
That's it, 23 past the hour. It is Mark Maron. We do want to know, what was your moment where you realized you were progressive? 877-520-1150. I thought it was interesting what that guy said about fear, that during the 2004 elections they found that people that were fearing for their own mortality, afraid of death,
yeah,
because that's what they've certainly become professionals at exploiting. Certainly with this, the national security frame. You know, the Republicans are desperate people. They're desperate. They got nothing. They got nothing left. All they have right now is blaming the media, and they're trying to set, the other frame they're trying to set is, this is coming up on the midterm elections, is based on the Russ Feingold proposal for censuring the president, which they should. He broke the law. He should be censured, which does nothing but punish him publicly. It reprimands him, doesn't punish him. There's no risk. Only two or three Democrats signed on, Boxer, Harkin, Kerry. But the Republicans want their minions to see the Feingold proposal of censure as an indication that Democrats are willing to make concessions on national security by criticizing and compromising a wartime president and his ability to fight the war on terror. But this, outside of being false, is ridiculous. The bottom line is he did break the law, and the bottom line is that by staying in this war, by wanting to go in before 9/11 even happened, by continuing the war in Iraq for eternity, by continuing a global culture of war, it only exacerbates terrorism. It only makes more terrorists. We're going to talk about it a little more as the show goes on. I want to roll some calls as the show goes on, 877-520-1150, about if you want to share your experiences of when your mind got blown open in terms of when you realized that being liberal was the right way to be. Let's take this call right now, and then we'll talk to Jim here, because Jim looks like he's got something festering. Also, in a minute on the show, we're going to be talking. I'm very excited to talk to Heather Rogers. She's the author of Gone Tomorrow: The Hidden Life of Garbage. When I saw this book, I was immediately fascinated. Did you ever read The Crying of Lot 49 by Thomas Pynchon?
No, I didn't.
That seems to be like a book that would be right up your alley.
A lot of our books are right up my alley, but I don't have time anymore.
The description of what was on the floor of a used car was just mind-blowing. Let's talk to Mike in Illinois. Mike, when did you realize, buddy? When did you realize?
I was in college. I grew up in a conservative Christian family.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a musician, and I was studying music in college, and I realized that it was kind of idiotic to be a musician and be conservative.
Yeah, it limits your options, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, what were you playing before you realized? What were you limited to? Were you just playing? I can't even imagine. Was it just?
Well, I thought I wanted to be a contemporary Christian musician.
Ooh, oh boy, yeah.
But then I realized that I'd rather just play rock and roll, you know.
Yeah, and thank God for that. We need people who just play rock and roll. I think a lot of those contemporary Christian musicians, outside of being unbearably annoying, have got to be just in it for the dough. Am I right?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right.
I mean, come on. What a ridiculous frame that is. And when I see those commercials for contemporary Christian classic and stuff, and I see those audiences, you know, waving their hands around saying hallelujah to a rock song, it looks exactly what I think a chamber in hell would look like.
Yeah. And it's just big business anyway.
Yeah, absolutely it's big business. Why not? I mean, you know, the Republicans are exploiting the Christians. Why can't everybody?
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Thanks for your call. Take it easy.
Mark, glad to have you back, man.
Oh, I appreciate that, Mike. Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye. Man, have you seen that commercial for contemporary Christian rock albums?
Yeah.
And you see
like that
audience? Oh my God! It reminds me of some sort of rally. It's frightening. And I think Creed, wasn't Creed originally a Christian rock band? Was Live a Christian rock band as well? No, not really. Maybe they were trying to lean that way because they realized that, like, man, maybe I do only have one hit in me, and maybe I got to move this other direction. Because if you find a culture or a group of people that will love you forever and you don't screw it up, you know, why not just tuck yourself into that little community? It's better if you're original and it's interesting. Wouldn't it be great just to have the following of Elvis Costello or Tom Waits? I mean, these guys, you know, are mavericks. They're real geniuses, and they've got a very loyal following of people that are excited to hear their genius. But if you're a Christian rock player, they're just excited to hear you repeat yourself over and over and over again and make you feel connected. Connected to JC. Not me, baby. All right, look. We're going to talk to Jim. We're going to talk to Heather Rogers about garbage in a minute. What could be more exciting than that on Thursday night? Nice long conversation about where your garbage goes. You're listening to The Mark Maron Show. It's Progressive Talk, 1150.
Now, his shrimp tacos are back! Mark Maron.
What are you talking about? I don't have shrimp tacos.
Your shrimp tacos are back!
My tacos are mucho grande. Come on, man.
Trey Elegante.
I'm so happy they're running promos for my show during my show. Gets me excited to be me. You know? Huh?
Oh, somebody ought to.
Why do you got it?
I don't know. He set me up.
877-520-1150. When did you become a liberal, David, in Hollywood? When did you become a liberal, David?
Hey, how's it going? You know, I grew up in Atlanta. I was, you know, born in New York, lived in Atlanta. We transported. And I was, like, in high school, and they call Democrats booger-eating liberals.
Booger-eaters.
Booger-eating liberals. That was my history teacher. That's what he said.
Your history teacher said that?
Yeah, Coach Moore. Yeah.
Coach Moore, your history teacher. This whole thing is getting more interesting.
Coach Moore.
Yeah, Coach Moore. He actually got fired from being the baseball coach. He just sort of hung around. He was a loser. I'm Italian, and he was like, is your family in the mafia, this and that? Anyway.
Oh, yeah, real open-minded guy, that guy.
Then, you know, my aunts have been converted to being, like, born again, and when I was in high school, my graduation gift was to go to this Bible camp in Tennessee.
Gee, thanks.
Where they taught me to hate Bill Clinton, literally. Like, if you believe, I'm Catholic, and then, you know, if you're Catholic, you go to hell. If you believe, you know, everyone in here is a conservative, and I didn't know what the hell, I didn't even know what it really meant.
Wait, honestly. David, I gotta get this straight. So your history teacher was a coach who assumed you were in the mafia because you were Italian.
Yeah.
And he called Democrats booger-eating liberals.
Yeah, then, in 96, yeah.
Then two of your aunts are converted to born-again Christianity. So as a gift for your graduation, they send you to a born-again Christian camp where you are indoctrinated with the idea that Bill Clinton is evil.
Evil, the devil. They had pictures of him coming out of, like, funerals laughing.
They had pictures?
You see him?
Pictures of him coming out of funerals laughing at camp?
Well, no, they projected it on the screen.
You can't? Is this for real?
Yes, and, like, we were watching this movie, Contact. It was, like, you know...
I know, Jamie, the Jodie Foster movie, yeah.
So, there is, like, anybody in here, we're all, like, 18 years old, 19, about to go to college. The premise of the whole camp was defending your faith against your, like, you know, your liberal professors when you go to college.
Whoa!
Defending your faith, yeah. And I didn't, you know, honestly, I didn't even know what it all meant, honestly. I was just, I want to play basketball and, like, make movies, and I didn't even know the difference.
I am fascinated by this camp. Do you remember the name of this camp?
Bryant College. It's in Bryant College. You can look it up. They still do it.
It's called what?
Summit.
Summit?
Yeah, Bryant College in Tennessee. And I think a little bit north of Chattanooga.
I'm writing that down. Bryant College in Tennessee, the summer camp.
Yeah. And the whole, really, it was sort of defending your faith, defending evolution, that it was, that evolution was a lie.
God, that sounds like really fun. Did you, weave nooses?
No. You know, and the thing is, I was into hip hop. I was like a white rapper, and like it was hilarious because like kids that were there, like I thought rap music people were in cults. Like 75% of the kids there were all homeschooled.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call Bryant College, the summer camp there, and I'm going to see if I can enroll my kid there.
You should.
I don't even have a kid, but I want them to. Did you ever see the movie Chinatown?
Yeah.
When Jack Nicholson goes into the old folks' home and says, "Do you accept Jews here?" And he says, "No, I'm sorry, we don't." Well, neither does Dad. I'm gonna pull one of those with this camp. I'm gonna act like one of them, and we're gonna get it on tape.
It's really amazing. Well, I could go on for days talking about it, but you know, it was before Y2K, and they told us like melt all of our gold, put all of our money into gold because there's gonna be like anarchy and this and that.
Oh my God, did they have a bunker at this camp?
I'm not sure if they did or not.
Probably. Maybe you weren't Christian enough to know where the bunker was. Maybe you didn't pass the test.
Yeah, you know, and it's just amazing that these people's intentions are supposed to be good, but it's so far off. It's just amazing.
Projected images of Bill Clinton laughing, walking out of a funeral.
Yeah, and so here's the best thing.
Okay.
These kids, it's contact. They're projecting contact.
The movie, yeah.
To see, like, you know, how the media views Christians as crazy people, whatever. Anyway, so they're like, it's a PG-13 movie. They're like, if anybody here wants to ask their parents to see the movie, call them now. And what? I'm like, holy moly! I love movies like Goodfellas and, you know, these, you know.
Oh, so they wanted you to call your parents to watch the movie?
If you felt like you needed to ask permission, and some kids did, and a few of them couldn't get in touch with their parents, so.
So did they try and get in touch with the aliens?
Yes.
What was the movie? Why would they need to ask permission to watch the movie?
PG-13. I think there was like a.
Oh my God! So yeah. Why were they showing you the movie Contact in the Christian camp? What did they have? Did they fill it with religious connotations?
Yeah. They're the media's representation of Christians because there's like a crazy Christian who tries to blow up the spaceship.
Whatever.
It's like Star Wars was evil and it was like Buddhist and this and that.
All right, so let's get to the moment. This is fascinating stuff, and I'm going to do research.
Yeah.
And I encourage you. Maybe you can call me another day and we'll do more stories about the Bryant College summer camp.
Yeah.
Now, when did you know you were a liberal?
Oh, you know, I got into film school as like an engineer. All right, this isn't working for me. And, you know, I went to film school and I started watching a lot of movies. And, you know, I just opened my eyes and I found Roger and me and it sort of put everything together. Because I think I always had liberal tendencies. It was always my blood. My parents raised me that way.
Well, just the fact that you resisted the brainwashing that you were subject to as a graduation present would connote that. So Roger and me is what opened the door to you realizing that there was...
Yeah, I was like, wow, it's just these guys, they're evil, they're selfish, and it was just amazing.
The greed demons.
You know, it's such a mixed message of Christianity and, like, helping the poor, and, like, it doesn't make any sense. They don't...
Yeah, I love that. I love that moment where you all of a sudden you see a doorway to the truth and you go through it. Thanks a lot for your call, David. Call anytime.
All right.
Bye. Man, we got to call that camp, dude. We got to call that camp. Can you believe that? They're projecting pictures of Bill Clinton laughing, walking out of a funeral, and that the coach was the history teacher? That in and of itself, coach history teacher. How is that going to end up good? Coach history teacher who calls Democrats booger-eating liberals. And he had to clean it up, obviously, for the kids. So, Jim, it looks like you have a lot on your mind there, buddy. So let's talk about something that's pissing you off. You want to give a spin to Jim's wheel of anger?
Sure, go ahead.
Here we go. And it looks like the wheel lands on the birth rate.
That's right. That's right, Mark.
What do you got?
I got this. Congratulations, Mrs. X. You've just given birth to a healthy baby bomb. Sound unlikely? Not in the world of the near future. Sure, using birth control and being pro-choice is every female's natural right, Mark. But come on, we need more liberal babies. Let's face it. Radical Islamists and fundamentalist Christians are popping out babies left and right, while people who read books and shake hands with women have curtailed birthing by at least 98%.
Wow. Okay. That's some number there.
I don't know what the real figure is, really. But it's real high up there, Mark.
Yeah, and there's no reason to be factual.
Yeah. Well, you get the message.
Yeah,
I do. Fundamentalists hate sex, but they sure do screw a lot.
Yeah.
It's a mystery I cannot explain right now. But there's one thing I'm certain of. Because they know how to birth armies, we all need to start screwing more. By we, I, of course, mean all non-Roman Catholics, all non-Catholics, all non-Christians. Okay, let me make this even easier. Anyone who got an erection during the whipping scene in Passion of Christ, they count.
Count me in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's time to start popping out free-thinking babies again, Mark.
Okay.
And don't worry about catching anything. It's not officially unprotected sex if you check their transcripts first. Now, I know what you're saying, Mark. What about you, Jim? What are you doing about it? Well, I'd father some kids myself if the dirty bomb factory in my basement hadn't made me sterile. Besides, I don't like kids. They're always sticky. They almost always refuse to salute you. So it's up to you, bloggers, and the five other people listening out there. Either endure the painful hell of stretch marks and overwhelming debt that comes with children, or get used to having people who regularly see Jesus appear in their sandwich elect our leaders. Remember, if God hadn't meant for stupid people to have children, he never would have invented cesareans. It is time to start humping again. At the rate we're going, it won't be long before we're all drowning in a sea of obese neocon crap machines, like that Star Trek episode with the Tribbles. Only this time, there won't be all that amusing homoerotic tension between T'Kai and Shatner. You've just taken a ride on Jim's Wheel of Anger. I'm Jim Earle, and you've been... and you've been Earled.
Yes! You know, that's an interesting point you bring up, Jim.
Yeah, thank you.
Kind of. I kind of drifted through the middle of it, but...
What? What the hell was that?
I'm very disappointed right now because we're trying to... All right. Look... I'm not disappointed. I was just told not to be.
What?
I was just told not to be disappointed. Nothing, Jim. We're moving on.
Moving on, how?
Yeah, we're moving on. No, but what you're talking about is interesting in terms of I've read and I've done research on this and I've tried to get a real definitive answer is I think that a lot of the anti-abortion movement is based in racial fear. Because I think that that minorities and ethnic people are reproducing at a higher rate than white Christian people, actually. And I think that there is a tremendous fear on behalf of white Christian people that they will soon be, you know, the minority. And I think a lot of the politics certainly that are supported around anti-abortion policies and certainly a lot of the conservative, old school conservatives is really founded in the old South and is really founded on racist policy.
What they don't take into account is that the mortality rate among births for minorities and lower income people is higher than whitey. And yeah. So that kind of balances out in some ways.
But I think what you're saying is true, too, because I have a lot of friends who are I am 42. I don't have children. I probably should have children, according to some. I can't wait much longer because I have, as I've mentioned before, I don't know if I've mentioned on this show, I really am putting the cutoff at 45. It is up to my wife. If she wants to have a kid, I'll have one up to 45. But after that, I'm not going to because I don't want to put a kid through that. I don't want to be the father that comes to school to pick him up and his friends go, is that your dad? Wow, he's so old. He's like my grandfather's age. I don't want to be that father. But I think you're right though. You don't have kids either. And
no.
Theoretically, what you're saying in that, in your diatribe there is that people like us, selfish, aging white males, who have not gotten their crap together enough to actually have kids because
we can't afford it.
For whatever. Dude, people have no money have kids. You
and
can
they can't afford
kids.
I've said, man, it's a hellish lifestyle. How do they do it?
Do you have a cat?
Yeah.
Well, you're good for the first 3 years. All right, because it's true. I mean, what happens after that? You know, you can put the kid outside, and they can usually fend for themselves, I'm not mistaken. But, no, it's true. I used to think that, too. That's not stopping me. You know what's stopping me? is that not that I'm afraid I'd be a bad father, but that I wouldn't make the time. But I'll tell you, when I visited my brother and his three kids, I turned in a big mush machine, and I was sitting there with my nieces and nephews just, you know, playing games, making origami things, and, you know, giving them food. And it was just very touching, and I'm getting all choked up right now. Yeah. So what do you say we have let's go make some kids. You not me and you, but...
You have a lot of young fans out there. Why don't you freeze your sperm and just send it out?
That was the weirdest thing about that 60 Minutes thing, is that the guy who donated all the sperm, that all these women were having his kids, and they all look kind of like him because he was a desirable donor on the list. And they're not named, but they found him, and they told him that he's got, like, these kids out there, God knows how many. And he's like, well, I'm not. It doesn't really matter to me. I'm just glad that I could bring to those women. How could you? You know, in his head he's going, that's right, man. I got some kids. I've got plenty of kids. I've got an entire tribe of kids, and they can all, just as long as they don't come find me, it's just nice to know that my seed is moving rapidly through the great gene pool, and I will be guaranteed my tribe will win, because on a biological level, that's what's going on down there.
It's instinctual to spread your seed.
Down there in the bag. That's the music.
That's your motto, by the way.
Down there in the bag?
No, it's instinctual to spread your seed.
It's instinctual to spread your seed. That's what's going on down there in the bag. So, look, hopefully we'll get Heather Rogers. And we got Matt Taibbi coming up. And we've got Aris Barr, very funny. And also Svetlana to review her experience at the premiere of the Cable Guy movie, 50 Past.
Now he's not quite right. Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim. That was nice.
You're welcome, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you're there for me, man. You got my back. You know what I mean? I'm glad about that.
You know, I speak the truth, man.
You do speak the truth, man. Right on, man. Dude, man, you speak the truth. Hey, you know, I am going to stop saying you know, first off. But April 1st, I'm going to be appearing in the basement of a piano store.
Oh, man, that's going to be great.
Yeah, well, I thought you were going to open for me. Is that going to happen?
Oh, man, that's going to be even better.
Are you going to do it or what?
Yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah, sure. Sure, man.
When was the last time you polished off those old jokies?
It's been about 4 years.
Yeah, Big Jim Earl's a bag of jokes.
You know, they're not very topical.
Huh?
My jokes are not very topical, so...
See, I'm doing that weird old Jew thing again. Why?
Well, you're a weird old Jew.
Why? Huh?
Eh?
Old Jew?
Okay, you're a middle-aged old weird
I'm
Jew.
I'm not. Let's not lean on the Semitic thing. You know what I mean? I'm not going to do that. I denied my Jewishness for years on stage, but at home, I was very Jewy. I danced like a Jew. Like Tevye. All day, I'd wake up. Every day. I did. I'm not kidding. What are you looking at me like that for? See, it's weird when I'm talking about this candid stuff about myself as a Jewish person growing up, and I'm looking at your blonde mug judging me. I have flashbacks from a time I wasn't even alive during. You understand?
My blonde mug is judging you?
Yeah, I feel that, Jim. So, okay, so here's the deal. If you want to go to the show, I believe it's a benefit even. I should know those kind of things. But it's a tremendous experience because you go down to Santa Monica. It's at the Steinway Piano Store, and they have a recital hall in the basement of this piano store. And it's a nice little room, seats about 100 people or so, and that's where it's going to be April 1st. You can go to markmaron.com to look at the information. And the information there, you call the woman who's doing it, who's running the show, and you buy tickets for her.
It's a benefit.
It's old school, buddy.
For what?
I'm not sure it's something that she organized. I should know the details on these things, but I'm not sure if the benefit was before or after. I'll have those details for you later. All I know is that you and I are going to do the show for a good cause.
Well, man, I have got like a 10-minute chunk on good cause, and I don't want to insult the whole thing. You know, what's going to happen to that 10-minute chunk?
Just
on good cause stuff.
It's going to be great. I've worked there before. I worked there with Scott Carter, who produces Bill Maher's show. We had a nice time. It's a very warm room. It's small. It's intimate. And it's not going. And Carlos Mencia will not come down there and take over. That will not happen down there. As a matter of fact, I'm just hoping that people come at all. So go to markmaron.com and come see me at Steinway Hall, which is that's actually amplifying it a little. It's literally a recital place. Studio, not a studio, it's a recital hall. in the basement of a piano store in Santa Monica. And there's a good barbecue place right across the street.
Oh, man.
Jim, you can get catfish. Don't let's not start with that now.
I don't want catfish. I don't want any barbecue either.
You know, you eat fish.
No, I don't.
Since when?
Since, like, 1982.
You don't eat any fish.
Fish have faces.
I love looking at fish, dead or alive. I love fish. I used to be fascinated with them. That was one of the things that, man, am I rambling. This is ridiculous. I thought there were things to
talk
about.
No, man, people are just glued to the radio right now.
Do you ever walk by? I find fish markets fascinating. When do you get the opportunity to poke around at a fish? You know, it's one thing looking at them in the aquarium, but when they're laying dead in a little crate, you can actually get right up there and go, man, look at that. Oh, touch it. You know what I mean? That's a tremendous experience for when you're 23, 24.
Poking around at a dead fish.
Yeah, poking around at dead fish. Yeah. I don't like fishing. I don't like that part of it, but I do like looking at fish. Oh, really? The music? Man, that was a riveting segment.
Already?
But think about what we did. We danced like Tevye. We touched fish. And we promoted a show in the bottom of a store, and we once again found out that Jim was a vegetarian. We'll be back with Aris. No, she's not coming till later. Svetlana will be here.
And now he just canceled the West 101 Sig Alert. Mark Maron.
I did it myself. I did it, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Man, I was so looking forward to talking to Heather Rogers, and I don't know if she's going to get on the phone with us because I think she might have fallen asleep by her phone or something. She's the author of the book Gone Tomorrow, The Hidden Life of Garbage, and I was excited to talk to her about garbage. I don't know what is going on. Maybe she was afraid you were going to start talking about meat, Jim.
Maybe some garbage fell on her.
No. I mean, this is a great book. We're going to have to. I'm going to call her myself tomorrow. I'm going to shoot her an email. I'm going to say, Heather, what the hell happened? Where the hell are you? It's a tall order for people on the East Coast to stay up to talk to us, and I appreciate when they do, but I was looking forward to talking to her, and I'm hoping that we can talk to her again soon. But that said, Svetlana, she's going to be here in a minute. She's our movie critic from Russia, working prostitute here in Hollywood. Wish I was kidding, folks. But this is Hollywood, and there is no place like it. And speaking of that, it was a beautiful day today. I am going to get into some heavier matters a little later. I am very appalled and disappointed and peeved in a deep way at Laura Ingraham and all of the right-wing press in general on any given day, but Laura Ingraham specifically. And, you know, look, I'm sad she has cancer, but you would think that because of that, she might have gotten some humility and might have, you know, found her heart a little bit, but she was right there with the rest of the right-wing machine, you know, slandering the media for what they see as stilted coverage of the war. They don't see enough flowers, not enough positive, perky outlook about the war. It's war. It's war. In the best of events, it's still war. War is negative, period. We'll talk about that. I don't want to get too heavy just yet, but I will eventually. A lot has happened in the world today in general. By the way, Matt Taibbi in a little while as well. Taibbi, who we're going to get on the phone, initially we had met him on the other show. And I didn't really take in the essence of Taibbi. I didn't really assess him properly because I found him a little off-putting. But, man, this article he wrote on Jack Abramoff and this one on Throwing Stone, excellent. And I've been obsessed with Jack Abramoff for 2 years now. I've never tried to learn more about a particular scandal in my life, but the Jack Abramoff and the Indian scandal, Smiling Jack, the Orthodox Jewish crook, was fascinating to me. And Taibbi was able to dig up information I had not seen, and I have seen most of the information on this guy. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. A lot has happened in the world, as I was saying, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. A document obtained by the Smoking Gun website details Vice President Dick Cheney's demand for his hotel rooms. Nothing major, just your standard no reflective surfaces, screen-proof padding for the walls, a cauldron, a bunch of tiny styrofoam globes that the vice president can crush between his palms while howling, "Mine! Mine! Mine!" A former aide to Fidel Castro, who now lives in Miami, spilled the dirt on the communist leader to a local newspaper. Among the more startling revelations, Castro has had Cuban writers and scientists working on a Cuban Yakov Smirnov since 1994, and a Cuban version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire called Who Wants Bread. That's in post-production right now. Investment banks and brokerage firms are cracking down on the practice of business executives meeting at strip clubs. Like the lap dances, the ban will have a trickle-down effect on businessmen everywhere. And that's the Mark Maron Show's short-order news for now. That is a true thing, my friend. That is a true thing about the rider for Dick Cheney. It showed up on the Smoking Gun. Was it the Smoking Gun where we found this? We've got a copy of the vice presidential rider for hotel rooms, what he needs. And it's sitting right in front of me. The items listed below are required for the vice president's downtime suite. Please contact blah, 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 advance office. There's the phone number. There's the phone number is actually there for the vice presidential advance office. I feel like we should call. We're going to call that camp. We're going to call that camp. You found it? Oh, good. Someone posted it, too. We're gonna have to do that. I'm sure we're not, I mean, no one's listening from that camp. They're not going to say, hey, he's going to call. We better be wary of Mark Maron's going to call the, what is it? The, what was it called? All right. Find it. But it's in Tennessee, and we're not going into Tennessee. We're only going into a 50-mile radius here, but maybe that'll be resolved eventually. Here we go. The vice presidential downtime requirements at a hotel. He needs a cleaner king-size bed. That doesn't seem outrageous. Desk with a chair, private bathroom, all lights turned on. That's a weird requirement. Temperature set at 68 degrees, not unusual. All televisions tuned to Fox News. That's understandable for who he is. Replace mini bar with maxi bar. Yeah, that's weird. Provide broadside of barn for target practice. Okay. Make sure the neighboring rooms are swept for bugs. If none are there, have them installed. Mm-hmm. Make sure bed is large enough for vice president and three lobbyists. If gifts are left, please make sure they are in unmarked bills. That's reasonable. Bottled water, 4 to 6 bottles. Diet caffeine-free Sprite. Curtain should be closed against reality. The president will be given the presidential suite. Mr. Cheney should get the real presidential suite. Yeah? Nothing? No cops. You got that?
No doctors, no cops.
Yeah. Make sure the staff knows any eye contact with vice president could result in a summary shooting. Yeah. Come on. Wait. Here's one. Rubber sheets and no questions.
Yeah. I like that one. Rubber sheets.
A pentagram on the floor? Anything? No. A hooker that looks like Ann Coulter. Hey. And this is interesting. Ann Coulter. Huh? Man, it's a tough room. Hotel restaurant menu. Yeah.
Buckshot.
Man, that's it. I'm done with you. I'm done with it. I'm done with it all. I'm going to walk out of here. I'm done. I thought that was funny. The audience in my head was laughing it up. Our entertainment correspondent. This is exciting because I just to see her walk in the room is quite thrilling. She is an old hand at entertaining herself. She does work as a prostitute here in Hollywood. Svetlana
Maximishlis.
I'm never going to get that, though.
Someday.
I'm never going to get that. So now, where have you been? What's going on?
It's been a long hot day here.
It was nice,
but we had the air conditioning system at St. Petersburg House of Pleasure was down. So we had to hire several Vietnamese girls to blow cold air on clients during copulation. But they like it. The girls, they love it. It's fun. It's fun for them.
It's like an added thing for people.
It is. And, you know, I just don't understand. All these Vietnamese here, why do they come to live in this country? They don't hold grudge. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah? But if I were Vietnamese, I'd want royalties from the movies they make about the war. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
But it's just me.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you're an immigrant yourself and that you would have that opinion of other
people. Vietnam is different, though. You know, it's different. Those are Asian.
Did you see movies? Are we going to do movies?
I did. We're doing movies, absolutely. Okay. That's why you pay me.
Yeah.
The first one we saw is Thank You for Smoking. It's fantastic.
I saw it. I like it.
It's good. Mm-hmm. It's good. Finally, a movie after my own heart. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been very hard for me to adjust to these ridiculous no-smoking laws in this country.
Sure.
They don't let you smoke in the places where you need cigarettes the most. Hospital.
Mm.
In Kiev, everyone smokes in hospital.
Sure.
Doctors are lighting up during surgery. How else can they handle tension, I ask you?
Yeah.
Now tell me, how else can they handle it?
I don't know.
They can't handle it.
Okay, all
right.
That's
why they smoke.
Okay, it's a good question, and you answered it.
The star of the movie, Aaron Eckhart. He's fantastic. This guy has range. You look at him. He's so handsome. He's a chameleon.
Yeah.
This guy could play equally well Jewish, nebbish character and neo-Nazi.
Or both in an interesting movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, maybe that could happen, but I know what you're saying about him.
It's nice. Speaking of happy Christians.
Yeah, as we were.
I was at the premiere for Larry the Cable Guy Health Inspector. You've heard of this guy, Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah, I know Larry the Cable. He's a comedian. He does a sort of like kind of a simple philosophy guy.
Yes, he's man of the people, salt of the earth. Yeah, right. I will be honest with you, Marcos. I did not know what to expect.
Sure.
I had never heard of this guy before. I told people, hey, I got ticket for a premiere Cable Guy. They said, oh, he is big in red states. I said, what is that red state? Only red state I know is Gulag and Orrin Hatch when he gets stimulated.
Orrin Hatch, a client.
Client, of course. Oh, very good tipper.
Oh, interesting.
Huge. Huge, by the way. Huge.
Yeah, really?
So much it's not manageable. It's like soup can.
No.
Soup can.
Orrin Hatch.
Orrin Hatch.
Who knew that?
He's a sweet man. Sweet man.
How do you like that?
Not a talker.
I would believe
more
that.
More of a yelper.
a yelper with a soup can.
He yelps with big soup can.
Yeah, big soup can.
What are you going to do? I'm a cavern. It's okay. I have to tell you, this Larry the Cable Guy, is a bundle of Confederate flesh, but so much fun.
Yeah, sure.
Charming, interesting flesh
really?
And style.
You like the movie?
I really like the movie. It's very enjoyable. He wears this cut-off plaid shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So much better than having pit stains.
Yeah.
You know, you Americans don't know, but we Russians have been dealing successfully with pit stains for centuries. Mm-hmm. You know the secret, Mark?
What?
Vodka. Stolichnaya. In armpit, you never have yellow stain.
No yellow stain. But
you smell like Courtney Love, but that is price to pay.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
I do understand.
Small price. She's a client. Wild one. Fantastic. Fantastic.
You know what's weird is I can't stand is when people wear deodorant and then they put their shirt on, they don't have a pit stain, they actually have a ring of deodorant.
That's disgusting.
It's disgusting. I'd rather you just stink.
You better smell like farm.
Yeah, exactly. I think so.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, what is this movie about? Larry is health inspector, assigned a partner, this young girl who looks like a boy, straight out of the academy with bug up her ass, and they're investigating food poisonings around the city. It's like a buddy movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never thought I would laugh at someone having diarrhea, but this guy makes it funny.
Sure, diarrhea.
Larry makes diarrhea very funny. It's inspiring. It made me feel like a little girl in Kiev again when I would sell my body for a sack of potatoes and celery root.
Now, how much diarrhea is there in the movie?
There's quite a bit of diarrhea.
Really?
There's farting. There's a lot of bowel movement. There's a lot of, but it's fun bodily functions.
But it doesn't come off as base. This is intelligent humor, though, right?
Well, it's intelligent diarrhea. I mean, it depends how you release it.
Yeah, okay,
you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's time
boy.
And place.
Sure.
Well, you went down that road.
I know.
You can't take me down and
then
go back.
That's clear. I'll remember that.
Yes,
if this movie
does not take itself seriously, mm-hmm. which is the way it should be. I mean, who wants to pay money to be depressed? Like Breaking the Waves. Do you remember that movie?
Do I remember it? I spent the day there.
Here, pay money to watch me get raped 46 times. Oh, look, I'm getting back on the ship. I want to get raped again. I mean, you're kidding me. And then, you know, I saw one on HBO last week, House of Sand and Fog.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Ben Kingsley, very intense.
You know, the next day after we watched the movie, my cat killed himself. He did. I found him face down in a litter box with a bottle of Vicodin and catnip. Unbelievable.
Where'd he get the Vicodin?
That's a different story. Yeah. Kennedy. Anyway, this movie is pure fun. You can stay stupid humor, redneck humor, it's all book. It's fun, farting Jews, something for everyone.
Really? The Jews too?
Something? Yes. Okay. Farting Jews.
Farting Jews.
Yeah. I have to go.
Where are you going?
I have a midnight session with Lee Horsley.
Really?
Yes, he's upset his career slowed down the last 15 years. I said I'd make him happy, smiling. Little oral pleasure go a long way. Just ask my Uncle Boris.
You don't got to tell me. Thanks for coming, Svetlana.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. So you look great, by the way. Turn her back on just for 1 second. I love this outfit. So this is what you go to work in?
Well, it depends. This contains my rack a little better. But when on street, I have to show a little more.
Sure. But it's dark out. You're going to a client, I'm assuming.
I have a little flashlight.
Okay. All right. Well, it's great to see you. We'll send you to another movie shortly.
Thank you.
Soon. Coming up on the show, folks, Matt Taibbi will be here. And we will actually have Aris Barr, who was in the movie that Svetlana just talked about. Maybe if you hang around, you can meet her. So just hang out. And the rest of you hang out. It's about 20 past. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show, AM 1150.
And now he just can't close. Mark Maron.
23 past the hour. I can't sell, man. I can close. Bryan College High School Camp, that's what we're calling. We're going to do that. As soon as we figure out where we can do that from, we're going to call them and record it on a thing that records. That's what we're going to do. A little while here, I'm disappointed, man. Heather Rogers, Gone Tomorrow, The Hidden Life of Garbage. Can't get her on the phone. We're going to talk about a lot of things. Recycling, planned obsolescence, which I am obsessed with. And I actually went out. I read an article on planned obsolescence once about the industrial designer that invented it. Brooke Stevens. Bought a book about Brooke Stevens. Planned obsolescence was one of those windows to another reality for me.
Somebody invented that?
Of course. An industrial designer invented it when he was designing cars, and he realized that if you just add things to a car, you can make people buy the same model every few years. And that changed the face of how consumer sales went and manufacturing and everything else, and apparently led to a lot of garbage. But hopefully we'll get Heather Rogers on another time. And I'm going to quit talking about it. Right now, our guest is starring in the Larry the Cable Guy movie, Larry the Cable Guy Health Inspector. We thank her for coming in, despite what Svetlana just had to say about the film and about her. Arise Barr, thanks for coming. I thought Svetlana was very nice about you, though.
Oh, no, I think she sounded like she liked the movie.
It did. You know, and it's weird about this movie is that you wouldn't think we'd, I'd be talking about it. You wouldn't think. I mean, I've known of Larry the Cable Guy in the comedy biz.
Right.
There's a lot of feuds about Larry the Cable Guy. But despite what anybody may say about him, I remember when he was Dan Whitney. I remember when he made this character. And he's made a tremendous living in show business. It's not everyone's cup of tea. But we're here to talk about you.
Of course.
So you play a sort of geeky...
I play an androgynous, straight out of the academy, little feller. He thinks I'm a boy throughout the movie.
He calls you a little feller?
He calls me a little feller.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I went from playing the Orthodox Jewess on Curb to playing a
boy. You were in
boy.
That great episode where you're stuck on
the
ski lift, yes. With Larry.
And I think I was the only Jew in 100-mile radius on set for this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I think we've upset Larry's wife here at the show, and she has not called us back. We had her on the other night.
Oh,
but that's
did?
Okay.
Oh,
yeah. She's very nice.
She's very sweet. He is actually one of the nicest people I've ever met.
Really?
Oh, my God. Really genuine, sweet, sweet guy.
That's very nice of you to say.
Yeah.
How about Larry the Cable Guy?
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So now you were just talking about on the break. This is not your first go at radio today.
No, I had at 5:30 a.m. Hey, this is Big Boy from Grand Rapids.
But you got to explain to people how this works. It's a very strange thing, the radio junket. When you do something, when you're promoting something, you get up in the morning, you sit in a booth, usually at a place like this, a Queer Channel or at NBC.
Well, I was in my bed, actually.
You were?
Yes.
And they were running a junket from the bed?
Yep,
so
in the bed.
A publicist was running a junket, which is where you have a publicist in between you and whatever show you're talking to, and it's just you go from show to show.
Show
and
to
like,
show.
Yeah, right now you're in South Dakota, and it's Billy Bob and the little guy.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, and they're like, hey, how you doing? What's going on?
Yeah, and it's places I've never heard of before. So it was
like
nice.
Where?
Cary, North Carolina?
Sure.
Yeah, okay, I guess
no,
you knew
nothing about
it.
No,
okay.
I'm just acting
yeah,
like I
yeah.
do. And what were some of the exchanges that you had?
Well, I mean, there were a couple of guys who were like, we saw your picture. You look hot. My pants are down. You're hot. And I'm like lying in my bed, and I'm like, thanks, guys.
Yeah, there's
see the
people,
movie.
There's people in their car driving through Appalachia going, give it to her, give
yeah,
it to
exactly,
her.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Turn her over.
Yeah.
But everybody was really nice, and it was all, you know, friendly and festive.
It's just, it's so mind-blowing when you just go from one to another, and all
yes.
you and in between them, you just have a publicist going, it's John and the little man.
Yeah, this yeah. guy's name is Chuck, and
yeah.
prepare to do the tag.
Yeah.
And there was, I did for Wichita, they were like, just do you mind just throwing in a couple of woo-shakalakas in between?
Really?
So I'm like, so the movie's about health, it's like, woo-shakalaka, and it's like, whoa! Everybody goes crazy. I'm like, I have no idea what the NCAA is, but I'll pretend. No, I do.
You're on with Billy Bob and the Fart Man.
Yeah.
So now, is this weird for you? You're going to see the movie with friends tomorrow night?
I am indeed.
That's what people in Hollywood do. They go see
it's
the
all about
opening,
you, exactly.
The opening of their own movies, though, with the little friends, a little party. My wife, Misha, went to see the History of Violence with the writer.
Did you like that?
I loved it.
Okay, I haven't seen it, but it's either love or hate with that movie.
I'll tell you, Jim's girlfriend, Heather, hates it.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, I thought she was going to throw me out of my own house when we had a dinner party.
People are very passionate about their feelings about that movie.
What, did you like it, Jim? You didn't?
I never saw it.
Okay, so you just stay out of the argument.
I haven't seen a movie since Ice Pirates.
Wow. So, Arise.
Yes.
Now, what kind of thing, what happens now? With
what
the,
happens
like,
now?
Like, are you a big star?
Well,
what
let's hope. I mean, at least, you know, at least in Middle America.
I'm very curious, aren't you? It hasn't opened yet. It opens tomorrow.
It hasn't. Yeah, let's hope for a big box office.
So you're going to see how much people love you, and your career is going to launch, and you're not going to come on my show anymore.
Maybe for a small fee.
Really?
Because I love you, Mark. Yeah,
we're going to start to part paying?
Probably.
Are you doing any funny around town? Are you doing any performing?
I'm shooting a pilot.
Wow.
So that's it's a cool project.
What's it called?
It's called The Big Bang Theory. It's for CBS.
And that's about two physicists? Or?
Yeah, a physicist and the hot girl, and then me.
You're the geek girl?
I'm, yeah. Yeah.
The smarty girl?
The smarty.
Do you wear glasses? Can you give us a taste of the character you'll be playing in the pilot?
Just your name is Gilda. That's all you need to know.
That's it? Could you give us a taste of the character you played in the Cable Guy movie?
Hi, Larry.
Okay.
And that's about it.
There's a lot of range.
It's huge range.
Impressive.
Huge.
I could feel the scope of your talent in
Thank you.
Recitation of two lines.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Thanks, Mark.
I've also got, can people go to your website and get your short films? Or do you have one?
Yeah, I do.
What is it?
The Unchosen Ones. It's actually going to be screening at the American Cinematheque on May 17th at the Spielberg Theater.
The Spielberg Theater?
I just got an email, yeah.
The Unchosen, that's the one about the trip to Israel?
Yes, it's where I play this, like, husband-hungry Jap, and I play all the characters, and I go to Israel to look for a husband, and then it's all improvised. And
well, thank you for coming down. It's nice to see you.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I guess that's fine.
Oh, come on.
Oh, it's fine, Mark. You hurt me, man. You hurt.
What are you talking about?
A little bit in the heart.
Well, thanks for being here with Mark and Jim. It's been a pleasure. We certainly can go out and see that movie, aren't we, Jim? Come on, yuck it up. What's your name? Iris?
Iris? Iris Bear.
What kind of name is that? Is that a weird Jew name?
It's a Hebrew name.
Oh, yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
But you don't play a Jew in the movie, Larry, do
you? No, God forbid.
All right, then. Well, thanks a lot for coming, sweetheart.
And, no worries.
Good luck with your career and out there in Hollywood where your people are. All right. Great having you.
Thank all right. you, honey.
I'm going to go to the game now. See you later. Hang out, though. It's 30 past.
And now, flibbly flobbly flubbly, Mark Maron.
Oh, man, you're slacking. That was it? That's what you had?
Hey, man, that was a good one.
What, are we in the middle of a chocolate bar or something?
Oh, man, come on. That was a good one.
All these gummy fruits. I'm picking all the wrong foods to eat on break, man. I tell you. Look, you are listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. This is the Mark Maron Show. You can go to markmaron.com. That's MARCMARON.com. Tonight, coming up still, we got Matt Taibbi, hopefully. We have got the man behind Crooks and Liars, John Amato, in just a minute. NBC News correspondent in Iraq, Michael Betcher, will be with us. A lot of stuff is going on. And one of the things that I find fascinating right now is like today, right there on the AOL homepage, they ask that question, is the media too negative? This is the big new frame of the neocon death cult. They're trying to build the frame in the brains of the zombies that it's a very old frame. It's the media only covers the negative part of the war. Folks, it's war. It is negative. It is bad. This one was based on lies from the beginning. It has failed on all fronts. It has exacerbated terrorism globally and destabilized the entire Mideast. American troops are now caught in the middle of a civil war. And like today, there was a report that stated in the last month, the average rate at which U.S. troops have been killed in Iraq has fallen significantly. Okay, so now let's try to look past the fact that they shouldn't be there at all, that they are stuck in the middle of a civil war, that they are under insurgent attacks constantly, and their presence in many respects is adding to the problem. Let's try to look past all that and just say that the average rate at which U.S. troops have been killed has fallen significantly. That line in itself, in the context of war, could be seen as positive. But it is impossible to remove the context, especially because the rest of the story goes on to say that the rates that they are being wounded, some, you know, so much so that they cannot return to duty, have dramatically increased. So their frame, there is no way to look at war in a positive way. And I believe that the media, if they were to truly cover the war for what it really is and for how it really is, it would be much worse. Our next guest actually does a lot of work for us, folks. We want to talk about the latest right-wing attack on the media, which I'm just getting into now. And we have this clip off of his website. This is a clip off of Crooks and Liars. And he put it up there just moments after it happened on TV. It's CNN's Jack Cafferty going off on the idea of what I was just talking about, that the media are making the war worse.
You know, I just have a question. I mean, part of the coverage, they don't like the coverage, maybe because we were sold a different ending to this story 3 years ago. We were told that we'd be embraced as conquering heroes, the flower petals strewn in the soldiers' paths, a unity government would be formed, everything would be rosy this 3 years after the fact, the troops would be home. Well, it's not turning out that way. And if somebody came into New York City and blew up St. Patrick's Cathedral, and in the resulting days they were finding 50 and 60 dead bodies, bodies a day on the streets in New York, you suppose the news media would cover it? You're damn right they would. This is nonsense. It's the media's fault and the news isn't good in Iraq. The news isn't good in Iraq. There's violence in Iraq. People are found dead every day in the streets of Baghdad. This didn't turn out the way the politicians told us it would. And it's our fault? I beg to differ.
Well, you know, see, that is similar to what I was saying. And Jack Cafferty was talking in response to Howard Kurtz from the Washington Post, who said that the media was too negative. We also have clips of Laura Ingraham saying outrageous things about the news media and that we're going to play later. The website crooksandliars.com is a daily chronicle of fleeting moments like these from the cable news networks and Sunday talk shows. I urge everyone to go there and spend some time watching these clips. You'll spend half the time just shaking your head, folks, in disbelief, and the rest just, you know, sort of going, yes! The man behind the Crooks and Liars website is John Amato. He joins us on the phone right now. How are you, John? Nice to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
It's great, man. You know, it's an amazing sight, and I don't know how you do it. Well, first, before I ask you that, how'd you get the sight started?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm a professional musician. Long story short, I was touring, and I got hurt, and I had to cancel the tour, and I wanted to get involved in politics, and I started watching TV because I was disabled, and I said, my God, these people are nuts. And when I realized that we found the technology to actually take it from TV and put it on the website, the idea was born. And I said, I have to bring this to people because you can read about these clips. You can read about some of the whacked out things that Pat Robertson would say. But when you actually see him say it, it's powerful. And that was my idea for Crooks and Liars.
I'll tell you, it is powerful, and it's a great service to everyone because, like you said, not everybody can watch all these television shows. Like, if I didn't have your site, I don't think I would have seen that Keith Olbermann thing. I rarely watch a lot of this stuff as it happens, but I go to sites like yours to just, you know, catch up and see what the hell's going on out there. I think it's very interesting, though, that you were home with an injury, and also you're a musician, so, you know, the couch is familiar.
It's my best buddy.
Yeah, so you're like, wow, I'm going to do something to help the world along. Were you in a band that I would know?
I was touring with Duran Duran at the time.
Wow. Well, you know, this led to something good. So now, how do you get the stuff up there so quickly? Is everything hooked up in the apartment so you can just go bang Zoom and it's there?
Well, yeah. I mean, it takes a little time, but you know, I know shows that I monitor. But now, since the site has grown so much and I have a lot of great readers, and they'll sometimes, you know, they'll email me tips. But this one today, you know, I was watching it, and you know, I had my own little dust up with Kurtz yesterday. So
with Howard Kurtz from the Washington Post, what happened?
Yeah, because you know the Washington Post had hired this right wing lunatic to write on their blog, and so I wrote about it, but the whole blog has been writing about it, and Kurtz singled me out in his column, and because I called the Washington Post, you know, a GOP mouthpiece by hiring this guy, so he took offense to that. And so then I responded, and then today when I happened to see him come on, and he was backing up the GOP spin, which, oh yes, it's basically the media's fault. They're, you know, they're only doing negative stories. I mean, it was ridiculous what he said before you hear the Cafferty clip, and so it was great that Jack was listening in, and as soon as Kurtz finished, Cafferty just came right in and slammed them.
You know, it's amazing. Another important thing about a site like yours is you can really see that all of these guys are disingenuous. They don't do their own thinking, and they are just dispatched by either the Republican National Committee or Karl Rove's office or whoever's doing it, distributing the talking points, and they're just like robots. And when you see them line up one after the other in video clips, you realize that it's just a tactic. It's just a game. It's got nothing to do with what any of them necessarily believe.
No, it's you know, it's their newest theme. I mean, they're in so much trouble. You know, Iraq, you know, the people have turned on the war. So it's the typical attack the messenger. So now the whole strategy was it's the media's fault. They did it in Vietnam. They're doing it now. And, you know, Kurtz, like a good soldier. I mean, the guy is saying that, yes, there's more negative stories, but because the journalists, there's so much violence, right, that the journalists can't go out and report what they want to report. They're a little frustrated. So that makes more negative stories. he's come out. I mean, it was just ridiculous what he's saying. And then for Cafferty, you know, I've sort of helped make him a little folk hero in the blogosphere, because he's had a lot of these great moments of just calling the administration to the carpet, where he's had even Blitzer sort of bumbling.
Well, that's the interesting thing about guys like Cafferty and guys like Dobbs, guys who have been in the racket a long time, and they have gotten to this point where they realize they don't have to tolerate this, and as responsible reporters, they've got to speak up about what the hell's going on and defend their own turf. And also, Olbermann, I saw that clip of Keith Olbermann in response to Laura Ingraham on your site, and dude, it made me choke up.
Oh, you know, I mean, again, for a person like Laura Ingraham to say that reporters are just, you know, writing stories from their balcony when over 80 journalists have been killed in Iraq is just despicable. And Keith, you know, to his credit, you know, he's been blasting them, and I'm so, you know, glad that he came out swinging. And I mean, she was a fool. And the Today Show, you know, I also do a lot of media criticism, as you see. And,
yeah.
And I mean, they'll have on Ann Coulter, you know, in the morning going to millions of people and not even tell people what she's all about, that you know, she's a racist, that she's, you know, half crazy, and then they ask her questions as if she's normal.
She's like an evil clown. I mean, she's not even a real thing. It's just manufactured personality that's just put together to provoke people.
Well, she's this vaudevillian, you know, bad act that actually, you know, went after Clinton. She's the one that was driving Paula Jones around in her car. She's the one, you know, that was trying to bring down Clinton with the whole thing. I mean, she was in the middle of that, and then she complains that, oh, people are a little not so nice to President Bush.
Yeah, it's baffling to me. And just the fact that, you know, Laura Ingraham is a vicious, you know, evil, I can't even say the word, and you know, I'm surprised at the fact that she's got cancer, and that didn't even bring some dignity or humility to her soul.
I laid off her, and I do, you know, obviously she was sick, and since I've been hurt and stuff like that, so I left her alone. But when it's like this cult of Bush, you know, I mean, they're like a mafia almost. It's not even, you know, they're not a conservative party. I mean, you know, there's Republicans, and I see it even in real conservative bloggers that just said, you know what, I can't vote Republican because they don't act like conservatives, and they're left with these talk show hosts that just, you know, have to undermine and just parrot these talking points, and she's one of the leaders, and you got, you know, the wackos, you know, from Rush Limbaugh. I'm going to put up a Rush Limbaugh clip tomorrow, and I mean, it's just despicable. Even today, I didn't get into it too much, but with the Christian peace activists that were rescued today, instead of it being that's a good story, they turned it around and said that, oh, they didn't even thank the troops. So now these are Christians that the right is always promoting, but it wasn't the right kind of Christian.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting to me, John Amato, and if you're listening, the website is crooksandliars.com. It's just that what becomes clear is not only is it a cult of Bush, because I'm starting to wonder about that in the sense that his approval ratings are so low and they are so desperate that the only thing that they got is to blame the media is sort of ridiculous. But I see these people as just evil opportunists that don't give a crap about anything but their own careers, trying to hold on to their own power.
Right, no, I agree with you. I mean, they're making a lot of money. I mean, look at Coulter. She makes $40,000 to $50,000 to go to a college campus, talk for 10 minutes. People boo her. She just sits there. I mean, there's a lot of money to be made. But if they were interested in the country, if they were interested to make this a better land, then they would be doing a different job. But instead, you get the Sean Hannity crowd, and it's just like they don't care, you know. They don't care about people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what does Hannity make? $5-6 million?
And they're being paid to distribute these talking points. It's their bread and butter. Hey, John, stay with us, because I want to, you know, in a second, I want to play the Laura Ingraham clip. I want to play the Keith Olbermann clip, because, you know, what I found fascinating about Olbermann is that, you know, he was on the verge of really, really snapping, you know, and I saw, you know, I kind of felt his heart in that moment. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, it was honest revulsion.
Yeah, and I have always had a pet peeve for Ingraham, you know, myself. And there's part of me as a human that wants to have some sympathy for what she's going through. But what a bad human. So our guest is John Amato, creator of Crooks and Liars, and we'll be back with him in those clips I just told you about in just a second. It's 49 past.
Sing on the Valentine.
Now he's good for the bottle. He's good for the can. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim, I guess. That sounds good. That's fine. John Amato is here with us. He's the creator of the website Crooks and Liars, and you can go to crooksandliars.com. So, John, we're going to play right now. We're going to start with Laura Ingraham, and I'm going to just feel my guts turn. And then we're going to go into Keith Olbermann's response to Laura Ingraham. So, and I found both of these on your site, and I appreciate that. But let's listen to these.
Okay. Today Show to Iraq. Bring the Today Show to Tal Afar. Do the show from the 4th ID at Camp Victory. Mm-hmm. And then when you talk to those soldiers on the ground, when you go out with the Iraqi military, when you talk to the villagers, when you see the children, then I want NBC to report on only the IEDs, only the killings, only the reprisals. To do a show from Iraq means to talk to the Iraqi military, to go out with the Iraqi military, mm-hmm. to actually have a conversation with the people instead of reporting from hotel balconies about the latest IEDs going off.
That was Laura Ingraham. Okay, and I'll tell you, and the thing that amazed me about her was that the type of junket that she's talking about, if they were to take the Today Show into Iraq, it would be not unlike that. You remember that truth tour?
Right, yeah. The right-wingers, they got together for a couple of days and went down over there.
That was Melanie Morgan.
Melanie Morgan,
and they were just cloistered in. They were protected. They were given sort of like the Disneyland tour of the one or two safe streets at that time of Iraq. And this is the type of thing that Laura Ingraham is paying lip service to. And, Olbermann, let's just play this because this killed me.
A note about Laura Ingraham's comments. I've known her a long time. I'll, in fact, give you the caveat that I've known her socially. But that hotel balcony crack was unforgivable. It was unforgivable to the memory of David Blum. It was unforgivable in consideration of Bob Woodruff and Doug Vogt. It was unforgivable in the light of what happened to Michael Kelly and what happened to Michael Weisskopf. It was unforgivable with Jill Carroll still a hostage in Iraq. And it's not only unforgivable of her, it was desperate and it was stupid.
That was Keith Olbermann from his show last night, and that the other clip was the Today Show that gave Laura Ingraham that platform. I don't even know why the hell she's on that show.
You know, again, it's the media, they have this, they're afraid, you know, they've been beaten into this pulp over the years from the conservative with liberal bias. And so, you know, I think Media Matters did a big search and found that they've had a huge, you know, there's a huge, many more conservatives on TV than liberals or Democrats. And so it's like we have to have somebody on because we don't want it to be liberal bias or whatever it is. And she made a fool of herself. And it's like it wouldn't matter what would be going on in a Iraq. They already have their script when they're going to come back, and they're going to tell you that everything's great. This is a civil war. 60 people a day are being killed.
This is the amazing thing. Just by virtue of somebody like Laura Ingraham being on, or anybody like Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, who the hell are these people? They're not even politicians. These guys are circus clowns. They're entertainers. They don't have any credibility of anything. They're not even reporters, John. And just by virtue of Laura Ingraham being on that show goes to show me that it's certainly no liberal bias. If there was a liberal bias, she wouldn't be able to come 10 feet from that place.
No. You know, how many people from Air America have been on the Today Show? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's this monopoly that they have on talk radio ever since Ronald Reagan took office, which was obviously, you know, it was one of their big ploys, which is to grab the media so that they can get their propaganda out there. And it's really I do a lot with the Today Show because it is a very heavily watched show. And
well, the interesting thing is that we, you know, someone from Air America shouldn't be on. Neither should these people. There should be real reporters doing real stuff, not just you know propaganda clowns jumping around trying to win some sort of, you know, sporting event. There are people's lives in the balance here.
No, exactly. And they're doing a disservice to the country. They're doing a disservice to our military. How many shows have Laura or Sean Hannity done about the fact that our troops don't have armor?
Well, exactly. And I tell you, you're doing a great service to the country, John Amato, creator of crooksandliars.com. Thanks for being with us. I hope you come back again.
Anytime, my friend.
Thanks a lot, John. Take it easy.
Bye.
Oh.
Stifled the bye-bye there.
Sometimes too quick on the button. Hey, we're going to come back. We've got Michael Betcher live in Iraq. We've also got Matt Taibbi in the wings. So so hang out and, you know, stay with us. 58 past.
Live from Burbank, California, where dreams go to get sick, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, it's time to take out the trash. Mark Maron!
All right, genius. This is class for kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, working conservatives, the rest of you. Look, folks, it gets a little serious now. It gets a little serious now with these Republicans, these right-wing hate demons claiming that the media only focuses on the bad, the deaths, which may be true, but the deeper truth is that war is probably much worse than what is being reported. In a minute, we're going to talk to Mike Betcher in Iraq. But first, before I get him on the phone, I want to play that Laura Ingraham thing again. Could you do that for me, Chris?
Bring the Today Show to Iraq. Bring the Today Show to Tal Afar. Do the show from the Fourth ID at Camp Victory. Mm-hmm. And then when you talk to those soldiers on the ground, when you go out with the Iraqi military, when you talk to the villagers, when you see the children, then I want NBC to report on only the IEDs, only the killings, only the reprisals. To do a show from Iraq means to talk to the Iraqi military, to go out with the Iraqi military, mm-hmm. to actually have a conversation with the people instead of reporting from hotel balconies about the latest IEDs going off.
Got the nerve of that person. In light of these comments, that was Laura Ingraham. We have an actual journalist on the phone speaking to us live. So we'll see how he takes being told he's not doing his job. He's a correspondent for NBC News located in Iraq. Mike Betcher, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Mark. No, I'm just sitting here on the balcony right now.
So. Oh, no. I got to ask you, I mean, what would you like to say to Laura Ingraham right now?
Well, I would have liked to have told her at the moment she was saying that she should have come along on the patrol I was at in South Central Iraq, where my Humvee passes over a roadside bomb and it's detonated at the Humvee right behind me, injuring the guys in the Humvee. And then 2 hours later, another one goes off where we had been standing 20 seconds earlier. You know, that, yeah, look,
yeah,
I was apoplectic about those comments. That was my day. The day she was saying that, that was my day.
That it's unbelievable to me that people like her who have no credentials whatsoever to do anything that I can see, certainly on television, certainly speaking about people like yourself and people who I'm sure you know that have lost their lives doing what you do. I mean, what the hell does she think is going on out there, and what nerve does she possibly have to say that kind of stuff?
A sign of her experience in the country is to talk about Camp Victory, which is a big city, protected city with walls around it. And as a matter of fact, the other Army and Marines in the country call Camp Victory Camp Gluttony, because it's people have their opinions and they can say whatever they want, but it always comes down to the fact that bash the media. Look, over the years, and I've been doing this network reporting for either CNN or NBC for 26 years, and I've lost dozens of friends. And you know something, this cliche about, you know, balcony or hotel reporting is a lot of BS, because we go out there as best we can. It's dangerous.
So what kind of dangers do you face on a day-to-day basis? I know you just described your day to me, and that sounded pretty horrendously frightening, and that is every day when you're out there. Is that right?
Yeah, you just don't know, Mark. I mean, you know, from time to time, some days are pass without much happening to you, but just even on a day like, let me give you an example. If, when I go out to do an interview, for example, I have to take an entire security team with me because it is dangerous out there. We're under threat of kidnapping. Jill Carroll was in our compound. That's where she lived. We, in November, you don't even have to leave the hotel, for example. I mean, two suicide bombers tried to take us out here.
Wow.
And they almost succeeded. They killed 8 people, wounded 40. But, you know, if for example, I want to go talk to a government official, this is my day. I have to go talk to our security team that plans a route. We would vary the route. We wouldn't go the same way going there than and coming back.
Mm-hmm.
It changes from day to day the situation. Right now, we worry about getting caught in the middle of the sectarian violence. We try to cover that, and it's really changed here for Iraq. I mean, these are the people who are really having a problem, not us. I mean, I can do this and get by and stay alive. It's Iraqis themselves right now who are having a big problem.
Well, let's talk about that, Mike.
We're
talking to Mike Boettcher. He's an NBC News correspondent in Iraq. You know, someone like Ori Ingham says that, well, they should get out there talking to regular Iraqis and talking to the troops. Now, we've got a president that just got on the television and said that we're probably going to be there well into whoever's the next president. And we've got what you're saying is sectarian violence. And I'm assuming I've talked to reporters who were in Iraq before that said this civil war has been going on probably for more than a year. Now, what are these regular Iraqis saying, you know, as of today?
Well, a real big indicator of how much fear they live under right now is usually an Iraqi would sit down and talk to you, be on camera at the drop of a hat, didn't care. Now, no one wants to talk to you on camera because they're afraid of being identified and being hit by the other side, whether they're Shiite or Sunni. And so the fear that normal Iraqis live under right now because of these tit-for-tat killings, some would call it tit-for-tat killings, some would call it civil war, some would call it sectarian strife, whatever it is, dozens are dying each day. And they are paying the price because that is the way the political, quote, process is being played out here right now.
Well, what's interesting
one
to me,
side killing the other.
Well, it's interesting to me, Mike, in what you were just saying is that you didn't mention the Americans, and in characterizing what you're talking about, it seems to me that the Americans may be, you know, in the way, and are certainly, you know, not being taken care of by their own government in relation to what's really going on there.
Well, in terms of, you speaking of the soldiers?
I'm talking about the soldiers because it sounds to me that if anything, from what I'm hearing out of Iraq, that these guys are in danger because they're in the middle of this thing, and in some situations they may be exacerbating the situation.
You know, the thing they try to do right now is stay out of the middle of it.
Right.
What you're seeing right now, Mark, is that the decline in the attacks on American troops and a sharp spike in the deaths of Iraqi army and Iraqi police. They are being pushed out front. Let me give you an example. 2 weeks ago, I went to look, bases are being turned over here, forward operating bases, they're called FOBs, are being turned over here at an accelerating pace to the Iraqi army. There are several of these going on each week, and they say they're turning over this battle space. And so what is happening is the Iraqi army, Iraqi police, is being pushed out front to deal with these issues, and that's why you're seeing the spike in those attacks. But I went to a base turnover in Sadr City 2 weeks ago. There was a karate demonstration there. There was a big thing to show. It was kind of a funny base handover ceremony, but it was interesting. They turned over this base. They said the Iraqi commander I spoke to, because I did go off the hotel balcony that day to go do an interview, and the Iraqi commander told me we're going to be out front. We're going to keep peace here. 2 days later, mortars and car bombs kill more than 50 in Sadr City, and this Iraqi army at that point melted away. They weren't there to do anything. They had been pushed forward. Are they ready yet? You know, that's what's being debated. Most of these guys, I really don't think are ready yet.
Do you find in what you've seen there that some of these guys who are in the Iraqi army that have been trained by the U.S. military are victims of that same sectarian fear that you're seeing with the civilians, that once they get onto the battlefield and they see who their enemies are, that they are afraid of reprisals that may come at them, you know, years after the Americans leave?
No, absolutely. And a lot of these guys, when they go out on raids, because of just what you said, their fear, wear balaclavas to hide their faces. Now, you don't do that just for the heck of it. You do it because you're afraid. And it happens on both sides, Sunni and Shiite. The biggest problem right now in this country are the militias. It's not the Iraqi army and the Iraqi police that run the show. It's the Mehdi army or the Bada brigades or the insurgents. I mean, they're the ones setting the agenda right now. And you can train up an army, put big numbers up, say it's 200,000, 300,000. Still, the big question is, do they control anything? Are they more than just numbers? And right now, I don't believe they are.
So now Mike Boettcher, NBC News correspondent in Iraq, it still seems to me that there is obviously many faces to what the conflict is there. Now, the difference between the Mehdi army and the insurgents and some of these, I guess, militias that I don't know if they're still within the Sunni police forces, some of them. But now, how do you characterize this? What is the difference at this point in time between what is characterized as an insurgent and somebody who is on either side of the sectarian battle?
Well, it's a good question, Mark. I mean, Sunnis would call insurgents who are fighting under the banner of Al-Qaeda in Iraq or whatever, they would call, some of them would call the homegrown insurgents as their own militia. It's
complicated.
It's very complicated.
Yeah.
But you have even with the Shiite themselves. Okay, you have the Bada brigades, Iranian trained, and you have the Mehdi army, which less than 2 years ago was fighting the United States, the U.S. soldiers here. And then on the other side, you have, on the Sunni side, well, you have the insurgency.
Right.
Now, the Shiites themselves are fighting each other, the Bada Brigade,
wow,
and the Mehdi army. Mm. And then you have the insurgents fighting these two Shiite militias. So you have tit for tat, that continues going on. And I hate that word tit for tat because it's not.
Yeah.
There's murder on the streets here, murder,
wow,
on the streets.
Well, you know,
every day.
I want to ask you, if you can sum it up quick, do you think the American public is getting the full picture of what's going on there?
No. I think it's actually worse than the picture we paint. Sure, there are some good things going on out there, but the bad things, I believe, overshadow it. I mean, if they can get their act together on a political process, then they got a shot at it. But I don't see it happening right now.
Right.
If a government can be formed, there is a shot at making this work, but I think it's a slim shot.
All right. Well, Mike Boettcher.
Hey,
yeah.
By the way, before you, I want to say that you, because of you, I never got to sleep past 6 a.m. For a year.
Oh,
and the sad, well, you know, I'm my real name is Mr. Farmer Cat.
Oh, yes, our famous blogger. Oh, that's,
yes,
so sweet.
Farmer Cat.
You guys have been great.
That's my wife.
I know. You guys have been great fans of the show, and it certainly, I'm so happy that I could have been there for you to entertain you at all.
Well, you know, you're living proof that radio executives never evolve past the stage of salamanders.
So. Thank you, Mike, so much. Thanks for being with us. Can we call you again?
Yeah, sure, anytime. Yeah, Borzu and I are in the same compound here, so
oh, anyway, great.
Call either one of us.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Mike Boettcher, NBC News correspondent in Iraq. We'll be back. We got Matt Taibbi coming up.
And now back to Mark Maron, now with Boost.
I'll tell you, Jim, I so miss talking to reporters in Iraq because, you know, on the old show, we were on top of that stuff all the time. And, you know, Mick Ware and Borzu Dargahi were guys that, you know, I was fascinated to talk to. These guys who were reporting that war, and Mike Boettcher now is the first time I talked to him, and what a great guy and an honest guy, and what you come out of it with. You talk to a guy who was out there on the ground, and he says flat out, this is a guy who is in it, and he says that it's much worse than the public knows here. And not only does that contradict, you know, what these right-wing idiots, these hate demons, these talking point mouthpieces are saying, but, you know, they are literally, those are the traitors. Those are the anti-Americans. The right-wing fascists, the Christo-fascists and these people that toe this party line with such a vengeance that they don't realize that they are operating against American principles. They are anti-American. They're the criminals. They are the people that are ashamed of this political system. The picture that Mike Boettcher painted for us in Iraq you know what's horrible about it is that is a situation that unfolded because of this president's selfishness, that he wanted to start this war before 9/11 just so he could be a commander-in-chief and guarantee himself power and hopefully create an eternal conflict that is unresolvable, because that is the picture that Mike Boettcher painted. The picture Mike Boettcher painted is that the Iraqi forces that have been trained by the American forces are incapable of defending or holding any territory. They're incapable because they are afraid of tribal elements, of sectarian violence that has gone on before the Americans got there and will go on for centuries after, probably. So right now, the Americans are stuck in between something that is going to be timeless, and it pre-existed our presence in that region. But now it has been exacerbated by the selfishness and the greed that this president went into that region with, only to guarantee a state of global instability so these guys can maintain power. It just blows me away.
To be told that they're painting a negative, overtly negative picture over there is amazing, when they can't even take pictures of the coffins coming home.
Yeah, exactly right.
That's incredible.
And to claim that the media only focuses on the bad, there is nothing else. There is nothing else. The truth of the matter is that, as he said, it could be much worse. I mean, look, if a road is built, if a school is built, if electricity can stay on for a day at a time, you know, even if all that is true, it is dwarfed by the reality that the number of U.S. troops killed since the beginning of the war is 2,319. In the last 39 days, there have been 49 American soldier deaths. That's 1.3 a day. And, folks, that's an improvement from January, when an average of 4.7 soldiers were killed a day. So I guess that's positive, if you want to overlook the fact that the number of soldiers that are being injured has skyrocketed. From February 11th to last week, 616 soldiers were injured, bringing the total of American injured soldiers to 17,269, not including injuries that reveal themselves after they get home. You don't hear about that stuff. Psychological injuries and tragedies that occur in relation to those scars, that mental damage, drug addiction, alcoholism, domestic abuse, homelessness, post-traumatic stress disorder. 7,981 of those injured were injured so badly that they were what they call WIA, not RTD, wounded in action, not returned to duty. Right now, this is happening at a rate of 7 American soldiers a day in an unwinnable situation because of pride and greed and stubbornness and the desire for this administration, the neocon death cult, and all of their minions, who are fundamentally anti-American, to create a state of global warfare to maintain power. It's disgusting. It's just disgusting. Look, we're going to talk to Matt Taibbi in a few minutes about Jack Abramoff, which is the other side of disgusting. This is the other side of this is the politics on the underside of the death. Heather Rogers called. She had some problems, so we're going to talk to her about Gone Tomorrow, The Hidden Life of Garbage. Tomorrow, she was very apologetic. We just can't bump Taibbi at this point. So we'll talk to her tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. Stay with us for Matt Taibbi. It's 29 past the hour.
And now he's covered in a hard candy shell, Mark Maron.
Thank you. 35 past the hour. Much love. Out goes out from me to Farmer Cat for introducing us to her husband, Mike Betcher. What a great guest, and what a great fan of the show. Dick of the day in a little while. Folks, last week I read the Vanity Fair piece on Jack Abramoff. Pissed me off. They humanized a guy. It was like a fluff piece of apologist journalism that enabled Abramoff to paint himself as a victim and a man of God, of all things. He claims he's trying to make the world a better place while he and a pack of other right-wing political assassins ambushed the democratic system and facilitated the Republican greed demons to feed shamelessly for years. Well, the hammer's coming down on the hammer because of Abramoff, and we can only hope dozens of other GOP legislators will go down as well. Jack Abramoff is definitely going to go down. I just hope he goes down hard. Our guest, Matt Taibbi, has been many things in his short life, a professional baseball player in Russia, the author of Spanking the Donkey, which was about his experiences on the 2004 campaign trail. He has an article in this month's Rolling Stone on Jack Abramoff that will blow your mind with the info he found. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. I love the piece because I just finished reading that Vanity Fair piece and it stunk. It was like this horrendous fluff apologist thing that it doesn't really capture what the guy is. Jack Abramoff is a career criminal, and you say in your piece that he was in the foreground or the background of almost every Republican political scandal of the past 25 years. Now, I'm willing to bet that this is the first time that most people are going to hear about this other stuff. So can we kind of do an overview? Can we start at the beginning with it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about Abramoff. It's funny, you know, when he first became a big figure in the news, a lot of profiles of him came out, and it seems like a lot of them, the histories sort of began at Brandeis University, and then you know, where he went to college,
right?
And then when he met Grover Norquist at Harvard, and Ralph Reed with the College Republicans, and then skip straight to the late 90s.
That's true. I mean, I'm reading the stuff in your thing about Johannesburg, South Africa, about Grenada, Iran-Contra. Nothing. I've seen none of that, and I've been up to my neck in this guy for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's funny. There isn't a whole lot on the record about a lot of this stuff, but it is there, and you know, I'm sure all the other reporters saw it. They just chose not to emphasize
it. Let's talk about South Africa first.
Sure. Yeah. In 1983, Abramoff was at the time he was the head of the National College Republican Committee.
Right.
In that capacity, he went to South Africa ostensibly to meet with a bunch of South African student groups, including a thing called the National Students Federation, which was had among its leaders a bunch of currently prominent South African politicians by the names of Russell Crystal and Tony Leon. They were far right-wing student organizations, you know, pro-apartheid. And when Abramoff went there, he stayed with a couple of rabbis by the name of Daniel and David Lappin, who ended up moving to the United States and being very cozy with Jerry Falwell and James Dobson and all those people. They became prominent sort of right-wing Jewish figures in America.
So anyway, this is interesting. So this guy, like, basically right out of college, aligns himself and gets involved with the most institutionally racist government on the planet.
Oh, yeah, right away. I mean, people have to remember what the context of this was. You know, in the early 80s, what was the big issue in on campuses in America? It was South Africa and disinvestment, and I guess, you know, the idea was that the College Republicans had to figure out a way to counter, you know, the sort of lefty demonstrations that were going on campus, so they forged alliances in South Africa, and that was what Abramoff was doing when he went there. But what he did when he went to South Africa is he met up with some people, and those people ended up helping him form a thing called the International Freedom Foundation, the IFF,
right,
which turned out to be sort of a front for the South African military intelligence services. This came out in a Truth and Reconciliation Commission hearing in the early 90s that the IFF was basically a front so that the South African government could fund propaganda against Nelson Mandela and the ANC around the world.
Okay, so Jack Abramoff is a sort of secondary player in the facilitation of this stuff and making connections between the United States government and this anti-apartheid government. And that,
pro-apartheid.
That's right, the pro-apartheid government. And that yields him what? Then he moves on to what when he comes back to the United States?
Well, he in the mid-90s, he becomes a figure. Well, the IFF would end up helping him make the movie Red Scorpion.
The worst movie ever, right?
The worst movie of all time. It's a really funny side note that Abramoff ended up heading up a committee for Jewish values and entertainment, and one of his first acts in that capacity apparently was to denounce Red Scorpion as being too violent. But
his own movie, he wrote and produced
it. but anyway, in the mid '80s, aside from South Africa, he ended up being involved with this thing called the Citizens for America, which was a private foundation founded by Louis Lerman. You remember this guy?
The guy who ran for, was it governor of New York?
Governor of New York, yeah.
Right.
He's the heir to the Rite Aid fortune.
Okay.
Ronald Reagan asked Lerman to found the Citizens for America. And basically what it was a group that was, you know, supposed to propagandize the Reagan agenda and foreign policy. But it also helped privately to raise money for various anti-communist causes around the world, including the Contras in Nicaragua. So Abramoff had a senior position in the CFA. And what he did, he ended up meeting with Oliver North, to help raise funds for the Contras. And you can see in the Iran-Contra documents there are a number of places where his name appears. He has meetings with the NSC, with Oliver North,
wow,
with a bunch of ex-CIA figures.
And, and how old is this kid? He's in his late 20s now, right?
He's not even in his late 20s. I think he's in his mid-20s.
We're talking to Matt Taibbi. He's written an article on Jack Abramoff for Rolling Stone magazine. I guess we should, because I think we can go on for a while with his back drop. But it's clear to say that this guy has been either covertly or blatantly involved in hardcore right-wing politics to the point of criminality his entire career.
Right.
But when it really becomes a business for him, how did everything change? How did the culture change that enabled him? Because I like the way you characterize these guys in the article as being just these horrendously, they're not smart, they were shameless and got away with a lot of stuff because they were enabled by this insanely willing to sell out congressional body.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's the most infuriating thing about this Abramoff thing, is that if you read a lot of the stories, they all kind of characterize him as this genius deal maker, you know, this revolutionary figure who transformed Washington. But, you know, all he did is just cheat. I mean, you know, the American system just isn't that hard to beat if you're willing to lie and cheat, you know. And it's actually, the Abramoff story is really similar to the Enron story in a lot of ways, because, you know, none of this would have been possible if he hadn't had, you know, enthusiastic partners all across the board, everywhere he looked. You know, I mean, I think he was characterized as this guy who was a genius and who was an innovator, and you know, that they continually characterized the whole Rove Norquist crew as this group of
wizards,
exactly, who came across the earth-shattering revelation that the rules could just not be followed, you know, whereas, you know, in reality, it's just not that hard to beat the system in America if everybody has no conscience and is willing to value money over principle, and that's sort of where we ended up in the late 90s.
But the amount of money that these congressmen were willing to do stuff for was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Really, $2,000, $5,000?
Exactly. You know, I mean, I used to live in Russia, you know.
Yeah.
I lived there for 10 years, and, you know, even the lowest, you know, Russian Duma deputy wouldn't sell his vote for $5,000. But you come across time after time in this Abramoff story, you know, instances of these guys who are willing to do, you know, extremely dishonest things for very small amounts of money, you know, $5,000, $10,000. I mean, none of the congressmen involved in any of these scandals are accused of taking contributions that exceed, you know, more than $30,000 or $40,000.
Well, I guess they were looking forward to a career of bribe taking.
I guess they just realized,
hey, I'm going to be here a while, and this guy's got this coming. You know, why make too much of a scene?
Exactly. Exactly.
That's, it's, the article was really nicely executed in the sense that you really tear this guy an ass, and I think it needs to be done, especially in light of that Vanity Fair piece. I'm sure you read that, right?
Well, you know, I understand, you know, what happens with a piece like that Vanity Fair piece, obviously, in order to get access to the guy. I mean, it's not like I didn't call up Abby Lowell, Abramoff's lawyer, and ask for an interview, too, but I certainly didn't expect to get one. But if the price, you know, for getting that interview is that you have to, you know, let this guy say things like, you know, I was just trying to save the world, and then you don't contradict him, you know, I'm not sure where that leaves you ethically, you know. I mean, I thought that was pretty silly, that Vanity Fair piece. But
it looks like Tom DeLay, I think, is going to take a hit for this. I don't think he's going to be back.
Well, you know, you never know. I mean, he just won that primary or that runoff in Texas by a wide margin. But you know, it does seem like they have him dead to rights in the criminal case. So
that, I think that'll pan out. And quickly, before we get out of here, Matt Taibbi, I want to ask you, what do you think, just from where you're sitting, because you're a cultural critic, what do you think this scandal reveals about just regular Americans?
Well, you know, I think what's really interesting to me is you know, if you follow the career of Abramoff, you know, it's interesting is he starts out as an ideologue. He starts out as someone who seems to believe in a cause, so he breaks the rules a little bit. You know, he's an anti-communist. He's a real believer in the Reagan, you know, policies and all of that. So he goes over and he twists a few rules. But by the time the late 90s and you know, the early part of this century rolls around, you know, he's on both sides of every issue. He's just raking in the money everywhere he goes. And it's really clear that he's just a self-interested pig at this point, that there really isn't any principle at stake. And what's interesting is that, you know, he had partners everywhere he looked, in Congress and government and in all these different countries, you know, even Ralph Reed and Norquist are double dealing everywhere. And it just seems to me like we've reached a stage in American history where, you know, it's like the reality TV culture where people will do anything. They'll eat spiders and bugs on television for a dollar. You know, I think we've reached a stage in our history where principle just really doesn't figure in anywhere at all. And a guy like Abramoff almost makes sense to people because, hey, well, you know, wouldn't you make $1 million doing this stuff if you could? You know?
That's right. So it's sort of two-sided, is that you have people that are willing to do anything for money, and then you have people that are will respect people who will subvert or transcend their own conscience to do whatever is necessary to make money. They actually aspire to that.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are upheld as heroes for it's like the Enron guys, the smartest guys in the room. You know, I mean, or Victor Conte, the Balco guy. I mean, they're decried as villains on the one hand, but on the other hand, there's definitely a part of our society, I think, that really admires these people for getting ahead, you know, just because they had the moxie to do it. And that, I think that's what's really dangerous about these stories, is that these people who are completely amoral, you know, and have,
that's right,
and sociopathic, you
and
know,
they're so quick to eat their own. That's the only end game about this whole thing that I find impressive, is that by virtue of the way they behave morally, they will turn on each other and just destroy each other.
Right.
But they're going to do the country in as well. But, I mean, that's the only way it ends up for these guys.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's definitely not like a Cosa Nostra thing where they just try not to rat each other out in the end. I think that they're all
that's true.
They're all going to be, you know, flipping as fat, like, you know, like a bunch of you know, Burger King burgers by the time this thing is over. I think you know, if there's anything left in the Justice Department that's legitimate, there's going to be a lot of people going to jail just because these guys are so self-interested that they'll do anything to avoid doing time. So.
That's right. Thanks a lot, Matt Taibbi. I love the piece. I hope to talk to you again.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care, Mark.
We'll be back in just a second with the Dick of the Day. And, of course, the short order news. Stay with us. It's about 50 past.
Says he has no plans to step down. Mark Maron.
I don't. We here at the Mark Maron Show want you to make positive. We want to make me. Come on, man.
Getting late. We here at the Mark Maron Show want to make positive contributions to society, so every night we bestow an honor upon one distinguished citizen whose actions most closely represent those of our esteemed vice president. Without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Once again, folks, today's dick is a known dick commodity. He'll probably see this title as an honor, but it still needs to be done. Today, Matt Drudge on the Drudge Report posted a company email of an ABC producer of the weekend edition of Good Morning America. The email was sent to someone in-house during the 2004 debates. As one of the right's preeminent media bitch boys, Drudge is honoring the bias in media frame that is being propagated today by the right-wing hate demons. The email read, quote, "Are you watching this? Bush makes me sick. If he uses the mixed messages line one more time, I'm going to puke," end quote. The fact that someone sent this to Drudge from ABC would indicate that there is actually balance in the organization, but that's not the point. The likelihood that the ass that sent the email must have just wanted to get the producer fired for his own dickish reasons, that makes him a rat douchebag and a dick enabler, which is actually worse than being a dick. The reality is the email has no significance in relation to the producer's ability to do his job. It is, after all, the weekend edition of Good Morning America, for God's sake. The act of posting it will probably get the guy fired. For what? Having a personal opinion? The sad truth is that we live in a culture that allows a closet-case, bottom-feeding slander imp who likes to batter boys with raw eggs and slurp it off their taut bottoms dictate people's future. That's one thing. The fact that Matt Drudge does it and enjoys it makes him the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
There you go. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on the current events before you go to bed. So here's the tonight's edition of Mark Maron Short Order News. A document obtained by the Smoking Gun website details Vice President Dick Cheney's demands for his hotel rooms. All the television channels need to be preset to Fox News because the shock of having to manually surf through another network's real news stories would put too much strain on his heart. A former aide to Fidel Castro, who now lives in Miami, spilled the dirt on the communist leader to a local newspaper. Delfin Fernandez says the Cuban leader has his underwear burned to foil any assassination plots with chemicals during laundering, and also to thwart any attempt at malicious Melvining. Investment banks and brokerage firms are cracking down on the practice of business executives meeting at strip clubs. The New York Stock Exchange recently proposed rules prohibiting bankers from holding meetings while rubbing up against strippers, but stop short of prohibiting them from being able to screw the public up the ass. And that's the Mark Maron Short Order News for tonight. Did I just go,
Yeah, you did.
All right, Jim.
All right, Mark.
It's been fun, man. I think we're becoming friends.
Yeah, I'll see you tonight.
Yeah?
No, I won't.
What's going to happen tonight? Am I missing something? You guys going out without me? No? All right, well, okay, so... Tomorrow we got comedian Todd Barry, Al Madrigal, comedian Al Madrigal. It's going to be big funny. I hope you don't mind that we do more funny. Dr. Michael Greger, who we didn't get to a couple days ago, the mad cow disease expert, he said he'll come on. And Heather Rogers, who sends her apologies for not showing up tonight, promises that she'll be here tomorrow to talk garbage. I want to talk garbage with Heather Rogers. Gone Tomorrow, The Hidden Life of Garbage is her book. So have a good night, sheeple. It was really a great show, and I enjoyed doing it for you folks. I'm going to throw this out.